This meeting is called to order. Madam Clerk, do we have a quorum?
We do have a quorum with all members present.
Member Lacey, can you please read the board goals?
Massachusetts and the Borough School District vision mission.
I'm usually loud enough. Okay. The Massachusetts and the Borough School District mission, vision, beliefs, values, goals, and objectives. Our vision, the Mattsu Borough School District will be a model of excellence in teaching, learning, and engaging all students. The mission, Mattsu Borough School District prepares students for success. The beliefs, we believe that all students can and want to learn, and success breeds success. The needs and the best interest of the students drive all decisions. The stakeholders' participation is crucial in student success. Our core values are stewardship, accountability, empathy, quality, integrity, efficiency, respect, and lack of reprisal. Our goals, we will improve student success, achievement, and performance by focusing on the career and college readiness. We will increase the graduation rate. Our schools will welcome families and community members in the education of our youth. We will create and maintain a safe and healthy environment for our students and staff. And our annual objectives and accountability are assessed by quarterly metrics and timelines. Mr. President.
Thank you. Mr. Vervolo, can you lead us in the Pledge of Allegiance, please? This takes us down to item two, which is approval of the agenda. Do we have a motion to approve the agenda?
I'd like to make a motion that we approve the agenda.
I'll second it.
Is there any dissent? Seeing none, agenda is approved. This takes us down to item three, and this is a public hearing, a budget public hearing, and we're going to do this for a maximum 1 hour. I'm going to turn this over to Dr. Paramo at this moment.
Do we have anyone signed up for that? We actually, under the superintendent's report, we have our budget update. Perhaps we move that update to this section, and then folks can come up and comment on that. Would that be the?
So we're looking at item three, budget public hearing, public comment on FY13 budget, 1 hour maximum, and then we have after that, persons be heard on non-agenda items, which would be items separate from this hour hour to be heard on budget. So you're proposing to do what?
Under the superintendent's report, we do have an update of information. As information comes in, we provide it. We also have the last rendition, if you will, prior to presenting to the assembly. So we could have folks comment and then review the budget under the superintendent's report as planned, or we can move our report above the public hearing.
If it's all right with the board, I'd suggest we move your report up to this section here, and we can deal with that now so folks can have an opportunity to weigh in if they want to.
Would you need to change it? Okay. We need to amend the agenda. Mr. President, I propose that we suspend the rules and amend the agenda.
Is there a second?
I'll second.
Is there any dissent? Seeing none.
Okay. So the amended agenda is to move the budget update to above the budget public hearing.
Yes.
Okay.
Is there any objection? Seeing none, so moved. So please, Dr. Paramo, go ahead and take over.
Okay, thank you. I'm going to separate my superintendent update into a couple of sections. The capital projects will be done at that later date or at that later time under item 7. At this time, I would just like to share a few comments before we're able to view the budget online. I'd like all board members to know that you were provided with a thumb drive, and on this thumb drive is the presentation for the Borough Assembly, which has the detailed information in regard to the ordinances in which we need to present. However, the items that are easily read and that we can go through in a fashion, Mr. Forrest will show you those. I do want to share some news. I've been with my assistants at one time, some board members at another time, traveling. around the state and country seeking funds for the Mat-Su Borough School District, telling our story, showing evidence of our effectiveness in the classroom with our student learning, and the evidence that our teachers are some of the top teachers in the entire state. Knowing the evidence that I did show was our what we call the blue book, the budget blue book. And within that budget blue book were some of the ideas that we have about our programs, but also the evidence of student learning. And it was taken quite well. We spent time with folks in Juneau from our delegation, from Anchorage's delegation. We also had a meeting with the governor's it's Mr. Lessman. I'm not exactly sure of his. I know he's high up with the governor. So what we presented, we know that there's three areas out there that would benefit the Mat-Su Borough School District in revenue. And these are some of the areas that previously the board has voted on in your legislative agenda. So I'm basically letting you know we followed through with that legislative agenda. And the items that the board asked that we move forward with in seeking revenue for our district, number one was the BSA, and there is a couple of BSA bills, and that meant about $3.4 million to our district. The second one was transportation, and transportation meant $4.9 million, almost $5 million to our district. Energy money, because as we talk about the BSA, if it was only that increase of $125, that barely made up what we received in one-time money last year. So we have three different legs, if you will, to this funding and this revenue problem in Mat-Su. You'll see again that we are approximately $9 million short in our operational fund. The lion's share of that, of course, half of that amount is health insurance costs. That's just a given. That's what we deal with every day, not only in Mat-Su, the state of Alaska, but across the country. We also have other employee compensation and transportation. Transportation was $4 million more, so a total of $13 million short. We did receive word today, and this is a bill. Please know that Mat-Su and our assistants in Juneau, that we created the bill. We did the footwork on the bill. We called 40 other districts on this bill. And today, the governor released a press release, I guess that's what it's called, that he does endorse the People Trans. So this is excellent news. The lion's share of what Mat-Su was missing now, I mean, it's $5 million out of 13, but we'll take every step that we can with the fund. So we are getting closer and closer to our target. In addition, so the governor said that he did support and endorse the whole bill for People Trans. And again, I just want to say thank you to our board for pushing this forward and allowing us to move forward with this, because we, Mat-Su School District and Mr. Ken Forrest, did that work along with the assistants in Juneau. And that amount included that we would be reimbursed for actual costs. Next year, had this not happened, we would have had to use $4 million from our general account to subsidize transportation. $4 million to us at about $100,000 per employee compensation was 40 teachers. So we are just thrilled to hear that. In addition, the governor did mention that there would be energy money. So that wasn't clear specifically. Of course, the legislative session is not over, and therein lies the problem with Mat-Su's budget. When we must turn in a budget by April 1st, and the legislative session that determines the revenue that school districts receive isn't finished to the 15th at the earliest of April. And then our local government, our assembly, really has through June to let us know. Mat-Su, actually there was a person at the budget hearings that said, you know, Mat-Su's at the bottom of that food chain, yet we have to produce our documents first. So two out of the three areas in which our board was seeking we have positive news, and the other is still out there. So I just want to say thank you, and we have been doing work. When we present the budget, please know that each time that we present it, we're adding this new information. And a budget is a spending plan and a revenue plan. And so it is not set in stone until we receive those funds, have those actual counts of enrollment, which doesn't even happen till next year, about December. So our plan will move forward, and it will change as we receive new information. So the two pieces of new information, the energy we put in there and the transportation we did as well. And so you will have an updated budget. We'll present this, and we'd like you to comment, of course, when we do vote on the budget and move forward with it, because that will determine what we present on the 20th at the joint session with the Assembly. But I just want to say thank you again for allowing us to move forward. I think that today's news is better than yesterday's news, and yesterday's news was better than the news a month ago. So we're going to continue to do what we can to provide the best programs in Matsubara School District. As we are a resource, a human resource, establishment, a human resource business, if you will, 83% of our total funds, $214 million, goes into paying employees, employees of every faction and function in the school district to make it work. And so I'm thrilled that, like I said, two of the three areas in which we were seeking funding may come to fruition, and we heard positive note from our governor today. So with that, Mr. Forrest, could you please present the new data?
What we have for everyone tonight is a very short presentation. I want to emphasize what the superintendent said. Posted on the district website is a document that's 576 pages in length. That is a combination of additional slides and a PowerPoint. And then, as the superintendent indicated, those items required by borough ordinance. So we have detailed information on class size, detailed information on the entire budget, every line in the general fund. All other funds are presented in summary. And so that information is online. Obviously, we didn't want to put everyone to sleep tonight by going through all 576 pages. So what we will do is go through this. First off, again, this is required by borough ordinance. It is required that it is submitted by April 1st of each year. This is a balanced budget, but it does not, under any circumstances, represent what we would consider to be an optimal budget for presenting the educational programs within our school district. It's going to require staff reductions. It's going to increase class size. And we're going to have an inability to provide for the students at the level we feel is appropriate. So I would like to emphasize to everyone here, let's talk about where does the money come from for the Matsubara School District. We are not fiscally independent. We have no opportunity whatsoever to raise revenue in this school district. The statutes in Alaska do not allow the school district to raise revenue. First source of revenue is the state. 76% comes from the state. 23% comes from the local contribution to the state formula or the borough assembly, and a very small fraction, 1%, comes from the federal government, usually in the form of E-rate. Next slide. So we have presented in that large document more than one scenario, so you'll be able to see that we are in an uncertain situation as you look through. We will show you one scenario tonight. The projected reductions for non-instructional areas are still under a significant review process. Why are the reductions already identified for the certificated staff? Because by statute and contract, we're required to make certain notifications by March 15th. For the non-certificated staff, we have basically all the way till the middle of June to make those notifications. So by contract and statute, we're required to make the educational, quote-unquote, in-classroom reductions envisioned with a zero-zero revenue increase first. So we have provided the detail. You can see the class size as it is now for every class in the district. So let's talk about the borough contribution. The state formula requires that all local boroughs and or municipalities contribute. In our case, it's 23%. How does that stack up? If you look at the right-hand corner of the screen, you can see we're projecting that the borough, if they gave a zero increase, which is what they gave last year, we would be at 78% of the maximum amount allowed. So the line in red shows you the maximum. The line in green shows you the minimum. And the $48 million in blue is the amount that they have been contributing. So that's about 78%. What has the borough contribution done and what does it look like? You can see these lines represent the borough contribution, and it's somewhat inconsistent. They give some money, then one year they actually gave less, and then it went up, and then it went back down. And you can see last year it was level. And so we've done it on a per-student basis. So, for example, last year on a per-student basis, the borough contribution actually went down. What about the ability to contribute at the local level? These are assessed valuation numbers and a CPI increase. So the very bottom line on this screen is the CPI, and that's what the CPI has done, the Anchorage CPI. The next line is the Anchorage assessed valuation, and you can see it's grown rather well, significantly above CPI. The line in the middle, the green line, is the Fairbanks assessed valuation growth. And the line at the top, is it?
Yeah.
Okay, flip-flop.
Red is Fairbanks.
Red is Fairbanks, sorry. The line at the top is the Mat-Su Borough School District. So our district has had the greatest increase in assessed valuation. Why is that important? As your assessed valuation increases, the number of mills required to supply the same tax revenue goes down. So how do we compare to Anchorage, which is the next largest district, and Fairbank, which is the next smallest district? If we were funded at the same per pupil level as Fairbanks, we would have $9 million more each year in our budget. If we were funded at the same per pupil level locally as Anchorage, we would have $20 million more in our budget. So when you start to compare the Mat-Su School District against what's going on in Anchorage and what type of staffing they have and class size, it's important to remember that if we had $20 million more in this budget, we would probably be presenting a different budget. Next slide. So we talked about the ability to obtain revenue through a mill levy. You can see what's been going on with the mill levy rate in the Mat-Su borough. The red line is the trend line. The blue line is the actual levy. So it's been decreasing since 2000. So what are we going to request from the borough? We start off with some information supplied by the borough. The total assessed valuation used in the mill levy calculations is $1,458,326,000. The average home value within the borough is $208,887. The current mill levy to support education locally is 6.480. The current mill levy for the existing bonds is 0.930. The projected mill levy for the new bonds is a 0.280. So the voters passed a $214,495,000 bond issue. We're extremely fortunate because at the current time, the market is producing rates lowest in the history of the borough. So when they go to sell the bonds will be sold at the lowest interest rate in the history of the borough. So we go on, and that means that the current mill levy required to support the Mat-Su Borough School District for next year is projected to be 7.690. We're requesting a 3% increase in our funding over last year. We're requesting that the borough increase their funding at 3% a year until the Mat-Su School District is between Fairbanks and Anchorage. We're between them in size. We feel it's justified to be between them in local revenue. We're also recommending that they're more consistent, i.e. that they do this 3% every year until they reach the goal we're requesting, and that they tell us for 2 years in advance that they're going to do it. This table, and again, all of this information is available online, this table provides the information as to what it would cost to start improving the educational funding from the local borough. You can see that for each $1 million, the mill levy increase is 0.14. Each $1 million will reduce class size by about 0.28 students and would allow us to hire 9.89 FTE. And so this table takes it all the way down to $7 million. And at $7 million, obviously they're still not at the cap. They can continue. They are at their own self-imposed cap. Why 3%? The Mat-Su Borough Assembly has passed a self-imposed ordinance saying they will not increase expenditures beyond 1.5% in any given year. We did not receive an expenditure increase from the borough last year, so we're asking for last year's 1.5, and we're asking for this year's 1.5. So where are we on the budget? Well, you can see that we have what we're calling our best-case scenario or most likely scenario at the present time. The most likely scenario funds transportation. This one does include transportation. No. This most likely scenario just changed because the superintendent said that there would be funding for transportation. So I'll take you through this. That yellow line would be one-time money equal to the one-time money that we received last year. We believe, based on the information that we have received, that the bills which have been sponsored to provide funding in what's called the base student allocation of $125 this year, $130 next year, $135 the third year, we do not believe that those will survive the House. The governor has indicated a willingness to provide some reimbursement for school districts at a one-time basis for energy and other increasing costs. The amount that the governor provided last year for this district, when you do the per student amount and multiply it times next year's projected enrollment, will be $2,346,000. So we are including that in our most likely scenario. Up until this point, we were not sure that Senate Bill 182, the transportation bill, would be successful. While it's not done, it has not cleared the House. With the endorsement of both the Senate and the governor, we are more likely to say this probably is going to occur. So right now, our most likely scenario says there would be 87 FTE that would have to be removed from the budget. However, if transportation is funded, we can reduce that by 31 FTE. So 87 minus 31, 56 FTE. 52 minus 1. 1 from 7 is 6. It's 87. Okay. Anyway, I want to point out one more thing on this. This is, as the superintendent has indicated, this is a very, very preliminary budget. The one thing I will guarantee you about every number you see tonight, they're going to change. We do not have the full state funding picture. We do not know if Senate Bill 182 will survive in its present form. We do not know what the level of one-time energy money will be from the governor. We do not know if the borough will give us an increase or not. The other problem of living in the Mat-Su borough, so to speak, is that the borough captures our ending fund balance. Why is this important? If you look here, we have a very small fund balance. Fund balance is our savings account. If we had been allowed to keep our fund balance, we could have smoothed staff reductions. Instead, At the end of each year, any savings which we have been able to accrue during the year, we usually ask the board to move into what are called capital improvement projects. Why do we do that? If we do not move the money into those projects and make one-time expenditures, the borough takes the money. So there's no advantage to us giving the money to the borough. By doing these one-time capital improvements, we can make improvements to the school district. We can do things like repair roofs, install a bus, combined bus area at the Houston schools, utilize those funds to provide a boardroom update in the administration building using students from CTHS to do that project. Those are one-time monies. They cannot be used to fund staff. They must be used as a one-time basis. So there are lots of projects that we were able to accomplish with that one-time money. Would we prefer to do that? Absolutely not. We would prefer to keep our fund balance. We would prefer to have the ability to smooth that. The board passed a resolution at their last meeting requesting that the borough change their ordinance to allow us to keep part of our fund balance, up to $5 million. State law allows us to keep up to 10%. So, currently, we have $1,400,000 in fund balance. Our daily operating expenditures are approximately $1 million per day. We have 1.5 days, basically, of operating expenditures. That's all. So 5% would be $10 million. That's what we're asking the borough to allow us to keep. 10%, which is allowed by state law, would be $21 million. And 15% would be $31 million, which would be closer to what the Government Finance Officer Association says a district of this size should have. So if you look down there, it's $35 million. So we probably would not recommend that at the present time for the obvious reason that we're suffering staff reductions. We're not a bank. We should fund the operations we have today. However, we are requesting up to 5%. So how do we compare to other school districts? Well, in 2009, you can see that little tiny red line was Mat-Su School District's fund balance. The blue line was Anchorage. The green line was Fairbanks. Notice what happened to Fairbanks. Looks like their assembly decided, perhaps we'll take their money. So they passed a resolution similar to the Mat-Su borough. Fairbanks no longer has a fund balance either. You'll notice that Anchorage's fund balance went up slightly and down slightly in 2011. They are continuing to use some of their fund balance to smooth the reductions due to their revenue decreases also. We don't have that ability. This is a very excerpted copy of the resolution that the board sent over to the borough. When we present to the borough, we're going to be reminding them and respectfully request that they allow this to proceed forward. What are some of our challenges? The red columns represent the increase in our health insurance cost as a district since 2000. Those little stubby what look like green lines, that's the CPI. So you can see that health insurance has gone up 130%. The CPI has gone up 30% since 2000. This is why the single largest increase to the budget next year is the cost of health insurance. So before we looked at what it would take to balance the budget by removing some staffing positions, you can see that Dr. Paramo said we had a shortfall between 9 and 10 million, and there it is. There's our $9 million shortfall. I want to point out that the employee benefits line is the single largest increase to the budget. The other two increases of any size are employee compensation. Down below, in an effort to have the least impact possible in the classrooms, almost every other line is a negative, meaning we've cut the budget outside of the classroom in an effort to fund the classrooms. Now, the one line that's positive, supplies and materials, that includes the 1% categorical funding the state put in for vocational technical education. And so that's why that's going up. It has a separate funding category. And then the last one is that one includes the transfer to other funds, contingencies, et cetera. This next slide shows the difference and how we're down to about $4.3 million. If we make the staffing reductions, which we are currently assuming would have to be made. So we have a worst
Forrest,
case.
May I, Mr. President? Can you go back one slide? In purchase services, is that what is that for? Is that for operations and maintenance, or is that for school supply? I mean, what's that for?
There's a very large...
Okay.
Yeah, I mean, purchase services, as defined by the state, are those professional technical services, copier contracts, okay. contracts for the special education providers that we can't obtain on staff. Okay. But you'll notice this has got a little note in it, in that you'll see that there was a change from the previous slide, and that's because when the charter schools build their budgets, mm-hmm. they move all their money into just one code. And so that sits there until they allocate the money. And like us, they're waiting to see, you know, what the final budget would be before they distribute the money.
Okay. Thank you.
So here we have a worst case and a best case scenario. Right now we're saying the worst case, if everything were to remain at zero, about 111 FTE would be required. And the best case scenario would be if we would still be looking at 42 FTE that have to be removed from the system. This, again, is before some additional scrubbing that is still going on. As we progress through the budget process, we're still looking at some other areas where we can cut back contracts and or services outside of the classroom. This is a slide that just shows you the impact of multi-year. If you look on the FAR numbers, you can see where the deficit starts to grow dramatically. There's additional information in this on the large packet. The reason you must balance the budget each year is because if you don't, you end up with these very large numbers to the right. That's why the statutes require that school districts, since we're not allowed to print money, must balance each year. That's a very short presentation. I would like to encourage everyone to go out and look at the larger presentation. We do have a much more in-depth analysis presented on the web.
Thank you. At this point, we're going to allow folks to come up and speak to the budget. And we're going to just briefly, once again, read the rules. It's going to be limited to 3 minutes. There's going to be a time period after this person's to be heard on items other than the budget. So,
President Dunleavy.
Sure.
For the audience, I was looking at the expanded version and not the abridged version that you all saw. First of all, is it my understanding it costs $1 million a day to run this place?
I'd like to explain that, why I said that. This was in reference to $214 million in our budget. If we took out the pass-through for PERS and TERS that, thank goodness, our state takes care of for all their federal or their state employees, teachers being included in that, that brings us down to about $189 million, roughly. And most of our contracts for folks and most people who work in the classroom for classified work 185-day contracts. So basically the difference between the majority of our staff working 185 days, about probably 1,800 of our 2,200 employees work 185 days, and that the cost of our budget being 189, in my head I said, boy, we want to make every day $1 million day for kids.
Okay. With that being said, when I left in 2005, I worked a 183-day contract. Why do we have two more days on the contract than we used to have?
MSEA asked to negotiate that in the last negotiation. So that was a request from MSEA, and it was granted.
Now, let's go back to page 83 here that you were just looking at.
on the services that we buy. Oh, excuse me, page 81. Purchase services and supplies and materials. Maybe we need to start cutting the budget even more in those areas. I mean,
that's exactly what we're doing. Mr. Lacey, when we talked about the reason that we had to do school staffing first for teachers is because there's a law that says teachers need to be notified by March 15th. However, a lot of those right. purchase services are for non-certificated staff and other projects that we do. So that's where we're going to start now, scrubbing that part of the budget to take non-certified staff and other services that we purchase to look at those parts. But the reason we had to start with certificated staff was the state timeline.
Right. Now, I don't see a breakdown of what you gave us last year as far as exactly where every dime's going and things like that. Is that, that's not in here?
Mm-hmm.
Or is it?
Yes.
It's in this little zip drive?
Yes.
Okay.
It's in the, it's also on the web. It's in the portfolio. There's 275 pages that are by function, by location, function, and object, every line in the budget.
And I'd like to remind all board members that if you would like a printed out copy rather than on your computer, we certainly can make those copies. It's just that we chose to have them used electronically. That was a board goal to go paperless, and so we tried to follow that. But if it would be easier rather than using your home printer, we certainly would do that for you.
If I, Mr. Lacey, on page 23, I'll just read the comment. We're doing the analysis, as I mentioned. We believe that there are still funds outside of the instructional area that need to be reviewed that we think can put significant dollars back into instruction. So on page 23 of the presentation, and for the listening audience, when you go look at the web version, the following comment is made. Line 9 shows a 2.6% increase over FY11 in this area. What is this area? It's district administrative support services. What does that pay for? Legal expenses. As the board is aware, we've had some significant litigation this year, and so we've had to up the budget there. As a result, the system automatically carries that additional expense into the next year. We're thinking maybe we can take some of that money out. We don't think maybe we'll have the level of litigation that we'll have this year, so we're going to look at that. We had money in there for the SERP. As you recall, we did that supplemental employee retirement program last year, and to ensure that we adequately covered that, we had to put a reserve. That reserve is there this year. We don't believe we're going to offer that program this year. Therefore, that can be removed in FY13. In addition to that, as you know, we've invested quite heavily in the IT infrastructure area. And had to put some upfront funds in to get that E-rate match. That's this year. We don't believe we need to do that next year. So we are have every anticipation that this scrub that is continuing to go on will keep lowering down that deficit. And so we are doing exactly what you're recommending.
Okay. And then on page 14, it shows Wasilla High School and the amount of students and courses taught per I assume that's fiscal year?
That's just, actually, it's one day this year, yes.
Okay, and I was over at Wasilla High School with the art thing the other day, and I was in two of these classrooms, and one of the teachers here, Mr. Jensen's is the class that I, his drafting class that I was in, he's got a lot more students in there than 18.
That could be.
And
so
how are these numbers, I mean, these numbers are about to make my head explode, and I want to make some.
So what I would recommend before that disaster occurs is that you look at the big portfolio in the back. And the very first appendix in the back is a summary of class size by school. What you're seeing on this slide is a sample of Wasilla High School. If you go to the second part of the first appendix, you'll see the detailed class size report for every class in the district as of that day. And so my recommendation is for a thorough analysis to go and look at that class size report. We produce that every night. Many of us receive it every day. If there are numbers wrong with that, then I would encourage both the teachers and the administration in the school to make sure that they're correctly accounting for the kids, because that is the official record-keeping system. We can only use what is reported. So the detail, it's about 146 pages, is provided in the back and shows you every class in every school. And I would encourage you to go look at that report.
And what's included is the largest class, the mean class size, and the minimum class size.
Okay. So, once again, we're going to have, we'll open this up for an hour. And this will just be on the budget, because after this, once again, we're going to have a person to be heard on other issues or topics that you may have that you want to address the board to. So with that, we're just going to read the guidelines very quickly. Folks will be limited to 3 minutes. The speaker states his or her name for the record. The speaker is limited to 3 minutes per meeting. The speaker is limited to non-agenda items. Agenda items will be open for public comment as they appear on the agenda. For this specific hour, it's going to be budget. The speaker's comments should be appropriate for all audiences, including school-age children. The speaker is limited to comments of a general nature, positive or negative. No disturbance or willful interruption of any board meeting shall be permitted. Persistence by an individual or group shall be grounds for the chair to terminate the privilege of addressing the meeting. The board may remove disruptive individuals and order the room clear if necessary. This is not a question and answer time. Speakers may be referred to the superintendent or designated to take issue under advisement. And once again, we'll do this for an hour. So are there any folks that wish to speak to the board to address the budget issues? Yes. Go ahead.
I have one person signed up for budget issues, and that is Tim Walters.
Mr. Walters, please state your name for the record.
My name is Tim Walters. I teach at Wasilla High School. Pardon me. I was rewriting things here. I'm here to speak about funding and budget issues with the district. I need to say, as I said last time, that my students honestly are the most important students in the district. And I'm sure every other teacher here in the district would argue with me, at least on that point, but we could all agree that all of our students are the most important. And I do appreciate the board's efforts to increase funding. I just wish that more of those efforts would go towards funding teachers in the classroom. I'm here to advocate for my students. They need teachers in the classroom, and that those teachers are the essential components in schools. Look, guys, I'm willing to jump up and down and scream for my kids, and I want you to do the same. If you support education funding, a substantive increase in education funding, I'll be behind you at the borough meeting. Heck, I'll go to Juneau with you, too. But these are our kids, and cutting back teachers in the classroom just doesn't cut it. So please, I urge you to advocate for a substantive increase from the borough. That's more than 3%. And us losing a bunch of teachers until we catch up with Fairbanks doesn't work. That, for the years that I have my kids, it'll hurt them. And that, to me, that's immoral. So please, do the right thing. Advocate for a real increase for my kids and all of our kids. Thank you.
Thank you.
On the budget public hearing sign-up sheet, I have people who have put they want to talk about Fronteras and the Bogart site for Fronteras, so I think that's an agenda item.
Right.
I don't have anyone else signed up that says they're here to talk about the budget.
Is there anyone else in the audience who would like to talk about the budget at this point?
Are we allowed to ask questions?
It's not a question and answer time, sorry. Okay. Yes. Please state your name for the record.
For the record, my name is Donna Hickel. I work at Wasilla High School. And I just want to say that for our students, they get 1 year in ninth grade, 1 year in 10th grade for the seniors, juniors, sophomores. You know, that's a year that cannot be repeated. We don't want it to be repeated. And so we do need to budget for everything that we can give them as they go through. Our own kids, they get one shot. And that's meaningful. And that's the only thing I think that I would like to add to what Tim Walters said. Thank you.
Thank you. Okay, with that, we're going to go now to the other persons to be heard. Yes? Yes, please come up, state your name for the record. This is on the budget, correct? Okay.
Hello. My name is Andrea Messenger Price. I am a Reed 180 teacher at Palmer High School, right here. And I would like to thank you very much and congratulate you on your success in obtaining additional funds. That's huge. I did not know that that activity was underway, and I'm thrilled to hear about it. I know that the governor has stated, or at least implied, that he would veto a base student allocation increase anyway. So trying to get as many funds as possible through these other means is essential, and I'm delighted to hear the news. Thank you. I am also very happy to hear addressed and acknowledged that our borough is not adequately funding education. At 78% of the cap, I knew they weren't funding to the cap. I had no idea it was that much less. And I do understand that by law or policy, we can't ask for more than certain incremental increases, and I'm going to assume that everything possible is being done to get those monies. The main thing I want to say is that I think that the district has done, that we have all done, a fantastic job, a huge job of increasing the programs, the research-based programs that are available to our students. I know that there is tremendous cost associated with some of those programs, but they're working. I think that we're closing the gap on reading at a rapid and impressive rate, and I hope next the attention will be turned to writing. Writing is so essential, not just as a skill, but as a cognitive process that can enhance the ability and the achievement of all of our students to such an enormous extent. But I realize that we are dealing with fiscal realities. I get that. And so I just want to encourage you to continue finding additional sources of revenue and making sure that those are funded to the max. I want to acknowledge that I recognize the great progress that we've made, and I think that our superintendent, Dina Paramo, has had an enormous impact on that progress, and I have observed this for a number of years, and I want to just hope and cross our fingers for all of us, for our students, that these programs don't have to go backwards. RTI is moving forward and has tremendous advantages to how we're meeting the needs of our students, and that's costly, I think, in some ways in terms of staffing. The professional development that's been provided is huge. I have been accused of being a professional development junkie, so I speak from experience. It does absolutely enhance our ability to serve our students in the classroom, and I would just hate to see these things disappear. So keep up the good work, fighting for us, and you know, I, for one, recognize that there are things that may require teacher cuts, but I pray not for all of our sake. Thank you.
Thank you. Would you like to come forward and speak? And this is on the budget, correct? Okay. Please state your name for the record.
I am Bob Williams. I would like to, my name is Bob Williams. I'm a parent of two children attending Matsu schools, and as you go out and advocate for extra funding, I'd like to be of assistance. If you hear in the community any talk that of places like California that have cut budgets, cut teachers, and test scores seem to rise, I have friends that are state teachers of the year in California, and please remind people in the community that that California, this is actually the very first year that California districts don't have reserve funds or federal stimulus money to draw from, and that tests only measure a small portion of selected skills in terms of what we expect from a quality education. Also, another strong recommendation I have for you is the book Flat World in Education by Linda Darling Hammond, particularly Chapter 4, and the report by the Albert Shanker Institute, Does Money Matter? To quote briefly from its executive summary, it says, political rhetoric adheres to the unfounded certainty that money doesn't make a difference in education and that reduced funding is unlikely to harm educational quality. Such proclamations have even been used to justify large cuts to education budgets over the past few years. These positions, however, have little basis in the empirical research on the relationship between funding and school quality. In essence, does quality matter? Yes. On average, aggregate measures of per pupil spending are positively associated with improved or higher student outcomes. Do school resources that cost money matter? Yes. School resources which cost money, including class size reduction or higher teacher salaries, are positively associated with student outcomes. Again, in some cases, those effects are larger than others, and there is also variation by student population and other contextual variables. On the whole, however, the things that cost money benefit students, and there is scarce evidence that there are more cost-effective alternatives. In short, money matters. Resources that cost money matter. Policymakers would be well advised to rely on high-quality research to guide critical choices they make regarding school finance. Please share these resources. Thank you for your time.
Thank you. So we're going to move down to the it's item four, persons to be heard on non-agenda items. So we're leaving the budget issue. And I'm not going to reread the rules again, but basically it's 3 minutes. And this will be your limit to non-agenda items. We'll have opportunity when we get to the agenda items to speak to those. The public will, as well as a staff will give a staff report. So at this point, again, are there any folks that wish to speak upon non-agenda items? Okay.
Jill Shulman.
I'm here to talk about the seven-period day, so I didn't know if it was appropriate to talk about it now or under the discussion. Now? Okay, great. My name is Jill Shulman. I'm the president of the Mat-Su Education Association. And during the last school board meeting, I talked to you about the recursive and reflective conversations that MSEA members have had regarding the current secondary schedule here in the Mat-Su Borough School District. Since then, members have continued to collect student achievement data. Tonight you will hear from several master teachers regarding student performance in their classrooms. In February, as you know, we surveyed our high school teachers. 182 members responded. That's about 73% of the high school teaching staff. You all received an email copy of the original survey as well as an updated survey. So it does now have some more information on it. And I'd like to focus on three more questions from the survey. 81.87% agreed or strongly agreed that the seven-period day is hurting the ability of struggling students to succeed. Excuse me. 64.67% agreed or strongly agreed that the seven-period day schedule has hurt teachers' ability to effectively communicate with parents. And 79.55% agreed or strongly agreed that the seven-period day schedule has damaged the teachers' ability to plan effective lessons and effective student learning. We have a couple more comments here. Colony High teacher says, adding 37 more students to my caseload does not make me a more effective or efficient teacher. This is not a factory, and I'm not producing widgets. I'm trying to help students become more proficient readers and writers. Another one says, I have several high-achieving students that have come into my office crying because the workload is too much for them this year. And instead of trying to manage the seven periods and maintaining academic rigor, they're willing to sacrifice their academics to take a lesser course and have less of a workload to maintain stability. Another says moving to seven periods has felt like a tipping point. Students seem more overwhelmed regarding time management, and even high-achieving students are less willing and able to do homework. My colleagues sitting behind me are professionals. They have a wealth of experience, knowledge, and are concerned about what's best for our children. I look forward to hearing their comments. Thank you very much.
Thank you.
Lori Miner.
Good evening, members of the board. My name is Lori Miner. I'm the president of the Classified Employees Association. last week, CEA participated with the district in a health insurance survey. And we would like to take the opportunity to thank Ken Forrest and Katie Gardner for coming to Wasilla High School and updating our members on health insurance. But don't be alarmed and surprised, you know, by the statistics that we have. 170 members agreed to looking further into our health insurance with United Healthcare, whereas 12 of our members opted for the NEA health insurance as is, status quo, and 12 wanted to move to a high deductible plan. Our committee is continuing to meet to see what is the best option for our members. And once we come, once we receive the data from the health trust, we will continue to meet and meet with the district. As Mr. Forrest pointed out in his presentation, health care is a very high price in a large portion of our budget. And CEA is doing what they can to ensure its members that that cost is not going to be felt in their salaries. But we would also like to encourage you to work with us and bringing that cost down, and we will continue to meet. Thank you.
Thank you.
And then I have Linda Haller.
Thank you.
My name is Linda Haller. In the 38 years I've lived in this valley, this is only the second time I've had to come forward and give testimony, public testimony, that I feel like the school board needs some direction on. You see, I subscribe to the philosophy that in my role as a voter, I select the most capable individuals who have the best of all of our students at heart. I put my confidence in you, and I thank you for your service. As a taxpayer, it was my job to support the schools financially. In my role as a parent, I should send them children who were ready to learn. Then later, when I began teaching, again, I put my confidence in a district that would support the best practices to enable learning. If I didn't know better, it would appear that you're trying to destroy public education, or at least trying to create an illiterate underclass. Does this seem harsh? It is. Since I have started teaching, I have seen one well-meaning effort after another chip away at the tools needed to produce the learned, well-rounded students that once graduated from our public schools. This seven-period day isn't best practices, nor is it a chisel. It's a sledgehammer. I'm not going to reiterate everything that is wrong with it, only those that I feel are the most profound. First of all, in my advanced placement classes, time is of the essence. You have drastically cut my instructional time. I was overjoyed when we started school in August because that gave us 2 extra weeks on the AP test to study for the AP test rather than having the 2 extra weeks after the test. It put us more on par with other states. That's gone. Secondly, the 7-period day was supposed to reduce class size. Okay, with smaller classes, you can move along more quickly. However, since reduced class size has not been realized, this compounds the problem of lost instructional time. That was a very nice budget presentation. This is my third point. When you're done with your presentation, do you give an evaluation now to see if your audience got a clear understanding? And what if they didn't get it? Are you going to hang around and reteach it? Oh, no, you don't have to. It's been my experience that those who don't get it are the first ones out the door. So you don't have to worry about catching them before they get away. Besides, I would never have time to talk to them anyway, because on any given day, I have at least 3 students who want to know what the presentation was 2 or 3 days ago or yesterday when they were absent. Then there is at least 1 who wants to know what the presentations are going to be for the next 2 weeks because they're going on vacation. Add to that a couple of students with easy questions. My homework's late. Can I still get credit? I lost mine. Can I have another? I'm supposed to do this in 6 minutes. More than once, students get disgruntled and leave. They, too, have a six-minute deadline. Sound hectic? It is. And that's the environment this has created. And though you may not care about the teacher's work environment, it is also that of the students. And the only way I can correct that is to reduce the amount of instruction. And sadly, that's going to happen. It's called survival.
Are you almost done, Ms. Holloway?
This seven-period day has me doing some ridiculous things. Have you ever timed how long it takes to go to the restroom? I have. I know. I need 2 minutes in the stall. I need 3 if I'm going to wash my hands. And I need an additional 1 to 2 minutes if I have to wait for a stall. So I'm supposed to do this in 6 minutes.
Ms. Holler.
I'm sorry.
That's okay. Thank you. Is there any... You have a... That's it? Okay. Is there anybody else that has not signed up that would like to speak at this time? Please come forward and state your name for the public, for the record.
Good evening. My name's Christy Hironkin, and I'm also going to speak about the seven-period day.
We're going to try to keep it at 3 minutes.
Okay, Thank you. All right. I've been a science teacher at Colony High School for about 10 years. I became a teacher because I love to learn. I like to think of learning as a journey. It's not just a means to an end. There's significance in the journey itself. Every day in my classroom, I am greeted with the opportunity to help guide students on their journey. I get to share my knowledge and my enthusiasm with them and hopefully inspire them along the way. This year, with the seven-period day and our reduced class time and the increased loads for both students and teachers, it's starting to feel less like a journey and more like a race. I find myself having to rush through or even skip altogether some of the great projects and labs I've done with my students in the past just to keep up with the curriculum. These were an opportunity for students to actually do science instead of just learning about what others have done. It was a chance for the upper-end students to explore the material a little more in-depth on their own, and a chance for the more reluctant learners to make some real-world connections with the content. Students are overwhelmed, and my colleagues and I are finding ourselves run down, stressed out, and frankly, we're feeling less effective at our jobs. I took a trip a few years ago to Arizona to visit a friend, and on my last day there, we decided to go to the Grand Canyon, and because of our time constraints, we wound up in what was probably one of the quickest tours of the South Rim of the Grand Canyon ever. Because we didn't take the proper time to explore and take everything in, the experience fell far short of its potential, and if I hadn't have snapped a few pictures, I probably wouldn't remember that day at all. Now, wouldn't it be a shame if our students look back on their education, on their time with us in the same way, with nothing but a list of grades on their transcript as evidence of where they've been? I feel like the students are getting the message that their journey isn't of value, that they just need to get in and out of our schools as quickly as possible, and that bothers me. So whether it takes scrubbing the budget in areas that don't directly affect the classroom or figuring out how we can get the borough to let us smooth our budget, if that was the correct term, we need our six-period day back. We need that time back. Our students, including the 220 kids that have sat in my classroom this year, as well as my own children, deserve to feel as if their schools and their school district value and respect their educational journey, a journey that takes time, and they need to know that they are worth our time. Thank you.
Thank you. Is there anyone else that would like to speak? Please come forward and state your name.
Hi, my name is Beverly Thompson. I'm a science teacher here at Palmer High School. I've had the distinct privilege to be here for 12 years, and in the course of that time, watched 8 schedules come through our building. This last one has had a severe impact on our students. The academic impact was just 0.1. 7-period day is an additional load for students who already struggle with the 6 periods of subjects that they have to do homework in. They don't have study halls or academic assistants. Last year when we had the 6-period day and farm, that allowed them an opportunity for additional help and makeup work time. We no longer can offer extra credit after school labs because there simply isn't enough time. We have freshman students severely impacted because of the fact that they can't drive to school and they can't get themselves home after school, so they can't stay late to get extra help. We've had loss of teaching time. That can be calculated. Everyone's done that math. Last year when we had the farm, we had the built-in consequence and reward system with the extra time for lunch, and that improved academic achievement and increased the graduation rate. Additionally, the second point is extracurricular activities have been severely impacted. There's no time to have meetings. Membership and participation have dropped off considerably. There's no time for training and practice for organizations such as FFA, BPA, and FCCLA. Research supports the positive impact the extracurricular activities have on student achievement. Science Olympiad can't even get enough students to get involved because there's no time to meet and get a team together. For 3 years, I participated in the Curriculum Review Committee for the Science Department based on the six-year review cycle that was a result of an audit a few years ago. We were supposed to do 80% of our time covering 100% of the GLEs, statewide GLEs that the HSGQE exam is supposed to cover, and we're supposed to teach them that information. Well, now with the loss of teaching time and the fact that we can't sacrifice some of the other things that take some of our time, such as pictures in the fall, testing, assemblies, class meetings, peak and career programs that come through, we can't get that time back, and we no longer can teach 100% of the material in 80% of the time because that 20% is gone, and we now have extra loads. Thank you.
Thank you. Is there anyone else that has not signed up? Please come forward and state your name for the record.
I'm Wendy Garrett. I'm a science teacher at Wasilla High School. Short and sweet on how overwhelmed students are. I was at my sister's wedding. I was gone for 4 days. Over those 4 days, I ended up with a parent phone call on one of our at-risk students calling me in the airport telling me that her kid was dropping out. I'm on the phone begging the kid to stick it out until I get back on campus so I can help him figure out what's going on. That same night in the airport, I get an email from another student, and I have to track down my principal, and she has to get a hold of the kid's parents because the kid's threatening to kill themselves. This is going on at this time of year. They're overwhelmed and can't handle it. And I just wanted you to know what our kids are going through. Thank you.
Thank you. Is there anyone else?
Good evening. My name is Carla Swick, and I am proud to be a product of the Matt Subaru school system. I was born and raised in Palmer, attended Swanson Elementary, Sherrod Elementary, Butte Elementary, Palmer Junior Middle School, and I graduated from Palmer High School in 1988. This is now my 15th year teaching both Japanese and English at Wasilla High School. Tonight, I feel compelled to come and share with you my perspective of the seven-period day. I'm the type of person and teacher who sets high expectations for myself and students, and in all my years of teaching, I have never worked so hard to feel so mediocre. And it is definitely due to the seven-period day. With extra classes, five preps, less overall instruction time, the loss of a substantial advisory period, and now six-minute passing periods, my day feels like a factory line. There isn't time to teach the guaranteed curriculum and the quality of instruction, assessment, and authentic, thorough feedback has been compromised. When it comes to teaching, I do know good practices. I want to be at the door, welcoming my students by name, giving them my full attention, answering their questions, and having authentic conversations. But with 6 minutes, I only have time to give closure to one class and pull up the next class's bell assignment before the bell rings. If students have a question or a concern, there isn't time to connect with them one-on-one between classes. This is frustrating for both teachers and the students. In attempts to accommodate my students, I do work with them during my lunch and my prep, but this takes away from time to plan or get work done, and it isn't a healthy balance. Another practice that the district emphasized at the beginning of the year, and one which I fully support, is that of collaboration. I would love to have the time to meet with fellow teachers, share and create curriculum, reflect and work together as a team. With this year's hectic schedule, though, we have had the least amount of FaceTime and talk time with our own colleagues. Real communication and inspiration can't happen through an email. I also worry that all the little things we usually do, the extra opportunities that we provide, will simply be lost. Who can keep up?
I have helped with the Rose Urban Rural Program for the last 8 years and have always involved my Japanese students in extra opportunities, scholarships, exchanges, and state competitions. These activities give our students the hands-on experience that is vital, builds confidence, and helps them take risks. I had a difficult time finding a teacher at the beginning of the year to help me with these programs. They were already so overwhelmed. It's already a struggle just to keep up with the challenges of our own classroom. These extra or little things, though, are often the spark that helps students find their future path. I know the Palmer High School's Saroma Japan Exchange Program, when I went to the school in 1987, was that spark for me. I want to see these types of extra programs continue, but I worry that teachers will simply burn out. I don't want to be a mediocre teacher, a mediocre wife, or a mediocre mother, nor do I want to produce mediocre students. So I think it's the primary responsibility of our school board to advocate for money for our school so we can successfully provide truly the best education. Please do that. Thank you.
Thank you. Is there anybody else that would like to speak on this item? We're going to have about 10 minutes, 12 minutes left. Is there anyone else that plans on speaking that didn't sign up so we have some idea? Okay, so one other after this. Okay, please state your name for the record.
I'm Rose Leifert. I'm a teacher at Wasilla High School. This is my 11th year of teaching and my second year at Wasilla High School. And what I want to tell you about is my experiences as a teacher, from going from a 6-period day to a 7-period day. What I noticed from last year to this year is that my students had, so many of these students are barely making it. They come from backgrounds that you were well aware of, a socioeconomic depressed society. And they come in and they interact with us. And I have the privilege and honor of being there to see them and smile and greet them. And what I'm seeing and hearing and saying and getting back from them is sad looks, tired faces, sleeping, unexorbitant amounts of sleeping in my classes towards the end of the day. They are exhausted or they are so hardwired they can't think. They can't think because they are crammed with information. They've had worksheets and this and that all day long, 7 periods a day. It's like a mass production of poorly produced products from a factory. And I am sad to say, when I see my daughter at Goose Bay Elementary, she is so excited and motivated to be there. And where does that go? Why do they come into high school and they have this look of that they don't feel like the community cares? They tell me that. They don't care about us, Mrs. Leifert. They don't care about us. And I say, why do you say that? Because look at where we work. Look at our school. Look at how they treat you. Look at how they treat us. We feel devalued. What do I say to them? I say to them, I care about you. And I can only say that these people have an important job because they represent this community. They represent the voice of all of us. And I respect the fact that you're here doing that. But this community has an investment, an economic investment, and they are our future. And public education is our future. And it's a choice that we have to make if we're going to invest in these kids. They don't feel like it, and they're dropping. We're losing them, and we'll continue to do so. That's all I have to say. Thank you.
Thank you. Okay, and there's one last. Come on up, Bob. No, it was budget.
I actually have a 2-hour presentation on the impact of the 7-period day, but at your request, I'm scaling it to 3 minutes.
Can you just repeat your name for the record, Bob?
Oh. I am Bob Williams, a 2011 nationally board certified teacher at Colony High School. I am the Alaska 2009 Teacher of the Year and also a recipient of the Presidential Award for Excellence in Mathematics Teaching. In 2010, I was one of 5 national finalists for the NEA Foundation Teaching Excellence Award. My greatest award of all time was a student's 2008 graduation stole with the following note. Mr. Williams, I have a confession to make. Before this year, I didn't like math. It was a struggle and made very little sense. Calculus was another story entirely. You made it fun, exciting, and easy to learn. I went from despising math to babbling incessantly about integrals and derivatives in the span of 9 months. I sport my calculus t-shirt proudly and will bring my cross-sections project wherever life manages to take me. I haven't told my parents for fear that they will disown me, but I have every intention of minoring in math. The seven-period schedule limits my ability to be the teacher I strive to be. Instead of cutting 17 classes at Colony High this year, we reduced the quality of all of our classes. The extra class each teacher teaches and the shortened amount of class time to teach each class has not benefited students or teachers. I have written more discipline referrals this year than the previous several years combined. The pace and workload has hurt struggling students, and even though I work 60 to 70 hours a week, I still feel inadequate. Like adding water to coffee, the increased quantity does not increase quality. The highly effective teachers I work with view this change as the Exxon Valdez of education policy, a disaster. When I voiced concerns before and after the schedule change, I was assured that other schools and other teachers were adapting well to the change. An MSEA high school survey of 185 high school teachers at Wasilla, Palmer, Colony, Career Tech, and Houston shows 8 out of 10 teachers see the seven-period schedule hurting teaching effectiveness, hurting struggling students, and decreasing the quality of classes taught. 86% of teachers believe the decision to implement the seven-period schedule was a mistake. The quality of the teacher has the greatest impact on student achievement, and 9 out of 10 high school teachers feel the district is heading in the wrong direction. 2 out of 3 high school teachers do not even believe that the district values and respects teachers. I am an optimist. I believe in the greater good and that we can work as a team for the benefit of all students. Mistakes can be corrected so that MATSU can keep and attract highly effective teachers. I also know that if MATSU residents knew the true cost of the seven-period schedule in our high schools in terms of quality and sustainability, the implementation decision could and would be reversed quickly. Thank you for your time.
Thank you.
You don't know if we have any borough? Are there any borough or city reports at this time? Please state your name for the record.
My name is Bert Cottle, City of Wasilla. I just wanted to give an update to the board on the library transfer and what's happening there. The borough has hired an engineering firm, and they're doing subdivision work right now, and that work will be completed by June. So that next step in the transfer of the land over to the city for construction of the new library will be one step closer. So just to give you an update.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Are there any administrative reports?
No.
Okay. No, we're going to keep going. So this will take us down to, there's no administrative reports. This will take us down to item 7. We already did the budget update, so we're going to do a capital projects update.
Okay, this is actually good news, and we did see a little bit of information about the budgets and the bonds, rather, and its cost to MATSU voters. But I am going to turn this over to Ken to just give an update of where we are on the bonds, and then I'll finish up the superintendent's report thereafter, and I know that then we can move to our student.
Just very quickly, the Department of Education for the state of Alaska has sent a final update letter which approves all projects except the charter schools, which we knew about, and Berriosova playground technical equipment. And as the board was apprised by the superintendent, we requested alternate funding directly from the legislature for those projects due to the technicality that Deed currently will not fund projects on leased property. So all of them have been approved. If we are unsuccessful in the legislative grants this year, we'll go back again next year and attempt to get that revision pulled from the law. We have 5 years to make that happen. So the good news is all other projects have been approved at the 70-30 funding level. The borough did approve for the chief financial officer of the borough to go out and start the bond sale process. Tammy Clayton gave a good presentation to the borough assembly, indicated it would be at the lowest rates in the history of the borough, and that the bonds would be sold at premium, meaning they'll only have to sell about $88 million in bonds to raise the first $100 million in proceeds for projects. This means that we will have money available this summer for construction projects. We're still attempting to work with the borough to find out which projects we'll be able to manage and which ones the borough will. So we think that things are moving forward and very successfully, and we look forward to being able to report the initiation of the first projects.
Thank you. Any questions for members of the board, for staff?
At the end of the superintendent's update, I just encourage, we will have a discussion on schedules at the end of this meeting placed under non-action items. There is an agreement both in the audience and I think in administration, schools, principals, teachers, and school board members that public education is our future. For those that are home, we have shirts in the audience. They stack them deep and teach them cheap. After listening to the budget, we know that it is not cheap. Public education is a quality investment for quality people, and Mat-Su Borough, as you see, our evidence in our work with students and the capacity of our teachers to be highly qualified, board certified, we do have that, and I just encourage folks to stay for that discussion to really be informed on the reasons why that decision was made, and that it was a joint decision between certified staff and an administration. So I encourage you to stay and listen to your colleagues as they report out on the fiscal response to troubled times in our budget. Thank you.
We're going to take a brief recess at this time.
The board members please come back to their seats. It's 7:30.
I know. So now we're going on to a, we need our superintendent. So we're out of recess. We're back in session. I'm going to turn this over to Dr. Paramo.
Thank you, Mr. President. At this time, I would like to introduce, of course, again, Delaney Mitchell, our student rep, with her student advisory board report.
Hi. I just have a brief presentation tonight on the Student Advisory Board's leadership conference that was on February 21st. This was our second annual conference. This was the first year that we had online registration, which was really convenient for those of us who are helping get workshops for people when they're coming in. The day that we had originally planned on having it, it was to be an in-service day for all students, but Palmer High had a makeup day, which kind of affected some of our numbers of students that were in attendance and some weather issues that were out of our control. But next year we're planning on meeting our goal for students in attendance. We had Dr. Framo as our opening speaker, which was really awesome. She got us off to a great start. These were the workshops that we offered and the speakers. We'd like to thank all of the board members and administration who participated. These were our three main speakers. Dr. Framo opened for us, as I said, and then our keynote speaker was Judge Cutler, who is pictured up there, and our closing speaker was Mr. Ed Ripley. These are just some pictures of students throughout the day and some of our workshop leaders and students in workshops. And we just like, again, to thank everyone who helped make this possible for us, and we appreciate you taking the time to lead workshops and participate, so thank you.
Thank you. That last picture is a student looking like Mr. Stone, I think. That was a good day, Delaney. Thank you.
I have to say that I got to participate that day, and it was a lot of fun. My wife's a teacher. I'm not. But I got to teach and a class on time management, and we were on time, and we finished on time. And it was a lot of fun. It was amazing, and the kids were really energized.
Yeah, I thought what was interesting was that was on a day when many of the schools did not have class, and a lot of students came to that, so they were very interested in it. So I thought it was a good deal. Thank you, Delaney. This takes us down to item 8, and that is our consent agenda. Is there a motion to move the consent agenda?
I make a motion that we move the consent agenda.
Is there a second?
I'll second.
Member Larson?
I'd like to pull C, which is 12-100, permission to accept and expand a grant North Lake Community Council for discussion, please.
Are there any other members that wish to pull an item at this point? Seeing none, this leaves us with item A and B. Is there any dissent? The item's been amended. We've got two items that we're going to run through the consent agenda, and one item that's pulled, item C, which is 12-100, permission to accept and expand the grant North Lake Community Council. Member Larson?
Bear with me for just a second.
Do you need help?
I'm getting there. First time for yellow stickies. I know it's old school to you, but it's brand new to me. On this grant, well, I'd like to know who the North Lake Community Council grant is. That was a name that I've never seen before or heard of, and I would just like to know, you know, who that is. Thank you.
Through the president, may I call up the principal of the school? This is Jenny Schmidt.
Yeah, I'm super, not really familiar either. However, we were contacted by Jeannie Wyndham, I believe her name is, and she said several nonprofits get chosen each year to receive a grant, and our school was included, along with, I think, gosh, there must have been three others listed, thank you. And anyway, so it was for anything that we felt we could use at our school. And I said, well, what kind of range do we have? And she said, just anything that we could help you with. So I initially asked for some playground equipment and technology items, some iPads additional. And we had to get quotes. So we did, through Apple and through a playground equipment company. It ended up that we got it approved by her group to get a classroom set, 25 iPads and covers. And so that's what it ended up being. Then we realized that we had to go through, as brought to our attention, we had to go through the board in order to get that approved. I wasn't aware of that, so that's where we're sitting right now. It's to get approval.
Margattis?
And I'd like to speak to that. Having gone to the North Lake Community Council meetings and being part of it, I think and I could be a little bit off, but there's revenue sharing that all of the community councils get, I think, through the state of Alaska, through the borough. And the North Lakes Community Council has used their revenue sharing for the schools within their community council. So I do know that they contacted Finger Lake, Fronteras, and a couple other schools in regard to, and that's what their membership has decided that they're going to do to benefit their community in their community council is participate in their schools in the extras that they need. So some of the community councils, I know the one in Point McKenzie, we're looking at trails and we're looking at dumpsters and things like that. So the North Lakes Community Council said, you know, we want to participate with our North Lakes schools. So that's how they got there.
Thank you.
Member Larson?
Yeah, I was just wondering who North Lakes Community Council was and what range they are. I mean, what area they are. That's
North
I might. Yes. They're the north of the lakes versus, quite frankly, there is a South Lakes Community Council, and they are south of the lakes. Oh. There you go.
That clarifies a lot. Thank you.
So this item has been pulled. Is there a motion to move this item for a vote?
I would like to move this item for a vote.
And I'll second it.
So we're moving item C, 12-100, permission to accept and expend the grant, North Lakes Community Council. Let's vote. It's unanimous. Motion passes. This takes us down to
Item 9, action items. A-12092, resolution 12-013 to establish food service subsidy from the FY13 general fund. Are there any members of the public that would like to, excuse me, is there a motion to move this item?
I would like to move item 12-092.
Is there a second?
Second.
Motion moved by Member Lacey, seconded by Member Larson. Are there any members of the public that would like to speak upon this particular item? Seeing none, is there a staff report?
Mr. Dunleavy, I would just, excuse me, Mr. President, Mr. Dunleavy, I would like to mention that this is should be highly considered item, and I'm going to provide you some information because there was a question that came out via your feedback and comments that mentioned this, and I'll try to spell it out, and then depending on how we pass it or adjust it. We do have this within a PowerPoint, and it's actually on this little clip drive, and currently, similar to transportation, as I stated, had we not moved forward with Senate Bill 182, there would have been $4 million from the general fund, which is generated by the student count, placed into transportation to subsidize it. So the fact that we're getting that back helps our classrooms and our teachers and our schedules. Similar to that, we have less of a problem, but it's quite the same. It's only $500,000 or $500,000 from the general fund is used currently and will move into the future, unless it's changed, to cover the cost, the true costs of food service. The question came to mind that came up through the comment was that currently in all of our schools, breakfast is free for all who would like it, all children. At lunchtime, lunch is free to all of our free and reduced children. So we just really have one rate. Either you pay or you don't pay. The difference between free and reduced is about $20,000, and the record keeping that would go into that was costing more than the $20,000. So the board many years ago just had those two, but we use free or reduced because that is currently the federal government's terms. For breakfast, we do now have an option for the board to consider. We do need to create a subsidy because even providing breakfast to free and reduced children who qualify would cost about $200,000 in addition to what we receive. However, remember, currently we're providing it to all children who want it. That costs $500,000. There is an availability to create this subsidy, and that's what you're voting on tonight, is to create a subsidy so that we can be in compliance with the federal government. But as we move forward with our budget, we would really like to know what the board would like to do, continue with the free and reduced or continue with the full free lunch. Money can be saved, like we talked about those line item issues where we could find extra money to put back in the classroom. This is one area.
Dr. Brahma, did you mean breakfast?
Correct. Sorry, breakfast, rather. So lunch is taken care of. Lunch is paid for. Lunch is working. What isn't working right now is the breakfast subsidy, and the difference is $300,000. The $200,000 that it costs for free and reduced compared to the $500,000 that it costs for the entire program. So the subsidy is one thing on the budget that we need to create, but because it was in comments and I was asked to speak about it before we move to the 20th, I thought it an item that should be under this noted.
I probably have two questions. The first one is, for the current school year, what is the amount that has been budgeted for the breakfast? And two, what is the actual percentage of students, and okay, that's on the paper, and the actual percentage of students that utilize that?
May I ask that the budget be punched up there?
Right. We have a very abbreviated food service presentation.
Could we run with that? Okay. Mm-hmm. Okay. Let's do that right now.
So, again, this is contained in the
larger document that's on the web, but this is an abbreviated version. You can see that currently we're looking at $524,000 is the transfer from the general fund on the left side of your screen. And we're anticipating a similar amount in FY13. If you go to the next slide. These are the total meals served as of March 5th. We have the paid, the reduced, and the free. And you can see the differences. And then if you go to the next slide, you can see total snack served, which is just one more small meal category. Here are the breakfast served. These are now projected for the entire year. So free breakfast served, $273,000, reduced roughly $50,000. And the paid category is actually paid by the subsidy from the Board of Education. And so there's the $264,000 that shows you the breakdown. If you go to the next slide, now this slide shows you the projected revenues for breakfast. So as the superintendent said, it cost about $300,000. You'll notice that zero is the top line. This is an unusual chart because they're all negative. And so you can see the subsidy, as the superintendent has indicated, it's about $200,000. And these are estimates. I want to emphasize these are estimates because these are projected throughout the rest of the year. So we're looking at about $318,000 is what we're saying is the cost for the breakfast, which are being provided free to students who would not otherwise qualify. And then we have lunches served, just as an FYI, again, in the larger presentation. And then there is some, on the next slide, you can see we have a smaller numbers related to a little bit of a subsidy on that program, very small. And then this is a breakdown at the elementary schools of free and reduced and then total free and reduced by school. And then it goes on to the next slide shows you the middle and high schools. So it just gives you an idea of the percentage of students that are free and reduced versus those who are eligible or not eligible for free and reduced.
Are there schools that qualify for this? I mean, the free and reduced lunches, do they? Is it only for Title I schools or is it for all of our schools?
No, all schools.
All schools. Okay. And that's through a federal grant?
Well, let me. Okay. All schools who are operating the program, not all charter charter schools are not operating the program.
Okay.
That's it. Just a very short presentation. Hopefully answer some of your questions.
Member Larson.
It states in here, and I assume this is free and reduced, when it talks about eligible students, is that free and reduced under the guidelines? Okay,
through the president, that is correct.
Any other questions, some members of the board? I have a couple questions that will be simple. If we don't pass this resolution, what happens?
We would need to pass this resolution because we know that we need to have a subsidy. So we basically all this is this resolution is to create the subsidy to be able to put funds into to hold so that we are in compliance with federal law that runs our federal program, our federal lunch program. The bigger question, though, is in the budget, which will come forward, is how much do we want to put into this subsidy. But the resolution is to create the subsidy, but this was on the board packet and there were some questions about the breakfast, the lunch, why we do it. So we wanted to clear that up, that the subsidy, as you saw, is absolutely a necessity. It's just the amount that we use from the general fund to subsidize our student lunches would be determined by the board, which has time to be discussed. You'll have time to make that decision.
Okay. I'm not trying to be obtuse or dense or whatever, but if we don't pass this, what happens? Because it almost sounds like it's we have to pass it, but
we're just creating an account to put it in so that we can
show evidence in our budget that it is balanced, because we are not allowed to produce something in the red to the borough for the ordinance. So to stay in compliance with the law, we would need to create a subsidy to show that it is paid for. So that's what we need to do to follow the law. But we don't, the bigger question is, how much money do we put in there? Do we only want to cover what we need to by law, the free and reduced, or do we want to cover all the free lunches?
Member Larson, Member Posner, Member Welton.
That decision isn't tonight, though, correct? Okay. And when we voted on free lunch for everybody, was there FTEs? Was there positions created for that? And will those positions be lost if we go and reduce this by $300,000?
Through the President, there weren't any additional jobs, if you will, for classified staff for lunch service. Is that your question? We didn't add any positions. However, when we take money out of the general fund, those could be other positions, such as if we average a teacher at $102,000, that could be something that we could put back in the general fund, back into the classroom. Mr. Forrest.
There was time added within, so the expense is primarily for the ingredients and the additional time added. So not really FTE, but time for people already working.
Like people that serve the meals,
And prepare.
We're added time, but not position.
Mm-hmm.
Okay, thank you.
Member Posner.
I understand the urgency in us creating this. Can we create and pass this and then go back and change it as we have time to talk about it and debate?
Through the President, yes, and actually that would be my recommendation. What we would like to do is then go back to the schools, have principals talk with their parents, have them talk with the stakeholders about the value of the funds and where they would best be served. So that would actually be the recommendation that administration would have.
Member Welton.
Okay, one more time, just so I'm clear here. Currently, we do have we are not able to meet, so we subsidize from our general funds currently.
Okay. Yes.
And in order to present our budget to the borough, we need to show that we are subsidizing.
That's correct. And as Dr. Paramo has indicated, for the presentation to the borough, this is showing that you would fully subsidize the program. However, as you know, the Board of Education will not be asked to adopt the budget until after all of the facts are known. So you have many more meetings that will occur where you can discuss and decide your level of subsidy.
One more question, please.
Yes.
Thank you. So if we were not doing free breakfast for everybody, would we still be subsidizing?
You will be subsidizing. It is our estimate at this time that there would still be a small subsidy required. However, Mr. Johnson and his team were starting to look at other ways we can address cost, increase participation, and so we're starting that process. You know, we had that one survey that was done by the students in CTE, so we're starting to address some of those issues. And the effort would be to see if we can't increase the revenue so that we would not need a subsidy. There is a difficulty I want to point out, and that has food service in this district is hamstrung by the fact that buildings have not been built to facilitate the greatest level of food service. So it's difficult for food service to do things that might be common in other districts, because they don't have kitchens. We built a brand new building with no lunch tables, no place for the kids to eat. It is common in this district for kids to eat in the classroom, which is fine. That appears to be the norm, and it's acceptable. However, it has cost and program ramifications. So we're starting to look at what are the ways we can address those so that the customer, the kids, feel that the program is valuable while we're still meeting the federal guidelines.
Member Welton, then Member Cordero, and then Member Gatz.
I'm done. Thank you.
You're done. Member Cordero.
In regards to, I know that we're mainly talking about the money right now because this is the budget season, but I'm interested also to know what has been the impact on the kids' achievement during the school day when they have their breakfast. I realize that we don't want hungry children, especially if they're poor and they can't get food at home. I mean, that certainly has an impact. But I do want to know what, when we didn't offer this service to now, if there was a noticeable impact on that, because that will help us, I believe.
Through the President, we can create a report and go back to the data prior to in our schools when we didn't have. Now, we have free breakfast, so this is just for the children who don't qualify, who are not eligible for breakfast, who take it.
Member Gaddis, then Member Lacey.
I'm going back to the comment that said that we're going to show it on our budget because we're going to make this presentation to the borough. And would we not have shown that we would have subsidized it even if we didn't go to the borough? So this really, does it have anything to do with showing? I mean, it sounds like that because we're going to the borough, now we want to make things look good. I want to be sure that's not what we're doing.
We're just following the rules and the regulations, which we would have done anyway, but I'll let Mr. Forrest comment on that.
Right. We feel that it's important that the board understands what we're going to present to the borough. And so we're telling you in advance of presenting to the borough that the presentation to the borough includes a full subsidy for this program. That can you can address the program and whether or not you need the subsidy subsequent to us presenting to the borough.
I understand.
But we didn't want to put the cart before the horse and commit the board without the board having knowledge.
Thank you.
Member Lacey.
To answer Member Cordero's question, I can tell you from firsthand experience that a child who's hungry in the morning does not learn. Mm-hmm. They're more apt to sleep in class or be cranky like me. So my point being, as a school district, we should try and squeeze the nickel so hard that the buffalo gasps. But this is not an item that we need to be skimping on.
Member Cordero, or excuse me, Member Lacey, is it a question or we're not at the comment?
No, I'm sorry.
Yeah.
I'm just,
okay. Are there any
jumping the gun.
Are there any additional questions for staff? I get thrown off there for a second. Just to, yeah. Okay, are there any comments? Are there any members of the public that would like to speak upon this item? Please come forward, state your name for the record. Remember, we have 3 minutes. Thank you.
Debbie Rutherford. I just want to ask about information that the district is going to be able to provide to the board before they make a final decision on the actual number in that subsidy, because I volunteer one day every week in my elementary school, and I've had a student say to me when I was sitting with him helping him read, just go, I just can't, I'm so hungry, I missed breakfast this morning. I said, you mean, well, we had breakfast at school. He said, well, that's what I mean. I normally do have breakfast at school, but something happened and he missed it. And I just lost him. I couldn't work with him because he just wasn't focusing. So I'd also know that there are kids that don't qualify for free and reduced that are taking the breakfast because they like it. But I don't know how we can tell the difference. And I also don't know how we can tell how many of them are would qualify but aren't filling out the paperwork. I know our school is constantly giving out that paperwork because we know more people qualify than are filling it out, and I don't know what you can do about that. And I don't know how you can figure out which ones are which, you know. But I do think that the board needs as much data and input from the teachers and input from the individual schools as we can get you before you decide to cut out that free breakfast, because for those it's important to, it's extremely important to. Thank you.
Thank you. I saw another hand. Please come forward and state your name for the record.
Hello, my name is Mark Bingo. I'm the retired principal from Big Lake Elementary School, and I was out there for 12 years.
We had the highest rate of poverty in the school of any big elementary or any school in the district. And we started the breakfast program out there, I can't remember exactly. It was a long time ago. Had a parent advocate who started it, and we initially charged, and then we went free for all of the students. And as I recall, last year we had a student population of about 415 and probably 230, 250 a day ate breakfast. I would have to tell you that in all my years in the field, that was probably one of the most profound things that we could do, was simply to feed them every morning. You know, you've heard the stories of the poverty in the kids, not just out there, but around different places. Many children, even coming from good family homes, I can tell you my own daughter, cranky, didn't want to eat in the morning. She was past elementary school, but I think if she would have had that, she would have taken advantage of it. It's just something, I know you can weigh the cost, teachers versus our staff versus that, but I think it had a dramatic effect on the learning environment. I'd encourage you to continue supporting that program.
Thank you. Any other questions? Are there any members of the public that would like to speak upon this item that haven't already? Okay, thank you. Do we have any comments from the school board? I think Member Lacey, you made your comment. Thank you. Member Cordero?
It is precisely what Mr. Vingo said that I wanted to hear, because it is those experiences that can really help us make those decisions, especially coming from the people who have the students in front of them and who are dealing with this on a daily basis. So I appreciated the comment.
Member Welton?
I would have to say I was at Big Lake Elementary School back in 2000, and there was times that there was a lot of hungry kids, and I do recognize that, you know, you cannot work with kids. And I was working with behavioral problems with the kids, and that was really significant. And I recognize that people don't do well when they're hungry. So thank you.
Thank you. Member Gaddis?
And I'd have to agree that they don't do well when they're hungry. I agree with you there. I also have parents that say, hey, I'm fixing a nice meal. I'm doing this in the morning. And my kid's like, no, Mom, I can go to school and get it for free. I have people that can very well afford it and want to cook a good meal, and their kids would rather go to school and get the free meal. So there are two sides to that. I'm hoping that we'll find some way to compromise with the kids that really do need it, get it, and that we don't take it that part away. So I'm hoping we'll go through this process.
Anyone else wish to make a comment? Just briefly, from my experience, this item has always been a strange one for school districts to get their arm around, because when you're charging, sometimes you're not collecting. Sometimes, and it always seems to be running a deficit, so it seems to be a strange issue within a school district. And my only question is, if we're going through a budgetary process in which money is tight and we're trying to get as much money as we possibly can, we need to start looking at items, and what I mean from an accounting point of view, not a don't feed the kids point of view, I want to go on the record of saying that, but what I am saying is, we want to make sure that when we're passing a resolution, what are we really passing? Is it a two-step, three-step process? Is there an automatic thing that happens once we pass the resolution? And that's what I'm saying. It's just a strange food service and lunch, free and reduced lunch and free and reduced breakfast has always been a very interesting issue. So I have one last question, and it's going to sound similar to the first two I had. If we pass this tonight, just one last time, what occurs?
What would occur is if we pass this, and we would present to the borough in our initial budget that this was a subsidy that we were going to support. We have two more budget hearings with our public. We have the borough input and their public input into the borough budget. If other information comes back that this and the information proves that maybe this isn't the best of our decisions to use with our funds, the board will make the ultimate decision on how to spend the revenue that it receives for its programs. So until June 30th and your budget is complete, you have the ability to change this item.
Okay, so I think we've exhausted this item, so let's go ahead and vote. It's unanimous. It passes. This takes us to the next item, which is...
Just want to point out there were two parts. You were just recognizing that under the federal statutes, we're required to raise the school lunch price. For us to remain in the school lunch program, we are required to do that, and so that's the other piece.
Right. Yeah, and thank you. This takes us down to item B, 12-093, recommendation for certified new hire. Is there a motion to move this item?
I'd like to make a motion that we move 12-093, certified new hires.
Second.
Motion made by Member Lacy, second by Member Cordero. Are there members of the public that would like to speak upon this item? Seeing none, is there a staff report?
Mr. President, I would like for Katie Gardner, our Director of Human Resources, to be present at the microphone just for efficiency purposes for item B, C, D, and E on action items. And we are prepared to answer questions as they come up, but we do not have a set report. Thank you.
Okay, so members of the board, now's your opportunity to ask staff questions on this item. And if there are no questions, we're going to move on. Okay, seeing no questions, thank you, staff. This motion's on the floor. Questions have been, question period is over. Are there any comments on this item? Okay, let's vote. Yes, it's unanimous. Thank you. This takes us down to item C, 12-094, recommendation for rehire of retired teachers. Is there a motion to move this item?
Make the motion that we move 12-094, recommendation for rehire of retired teachers.
I'll second.
Motion moved by Member Lacy, seconded by Member Cordero. Are there any members of the public that wish to speak upon this item? Seeing none, is there a staff report? Are there questions for members of the board for staff? Seeing none, let's vote. Motion passes. It's unanimous. Let's take this down to item D, 12-095, recommendation for reemployment of tenured teachers. Is there a motion to move this item?
I'd like to move 12-095, reemployment of tenured teachers.
I'll second.
Motion moved by Member Lacy, seconded by Member Cordero. Are there members of the public that would like to speak upon this item? Seeing none, are there questions from the board to staff regarding this item? Member Larson?
Was it the last meeting that we passed a resolution talking about laying off tenured teachers if we went into a budget crisis? Is that correct?
Through the President, we presented that would not be available. Through state statute, no tenured teachers will be laid off in the Matsubara School District. We do not qualify for those provisions. The two provisions in order to lay off a tenured teacher would be to have a drop in enrollment. We do not forecast a drop in our enrollment. And your basic need calculation, which is a part of the formula to fund schools, would need to have dropped by 3%. Neither of those items will come to fruition for the Matsubara School District. We will not lay off tenured teachers.
Any other questions of staff from members of the board? Seeing none, let's vote. Motion passes. It's unanimous. This takes us down to item E, 12-096, recommendation for contract approval of related service providers. Is there a motion to move this item?
I'd like to make a motion that we move 12-096.
I'll second.
Motion moved by Member Lacy, seconded by Member Cordero. Are there any members of the public that would like to speak upon this item? Seeing none, are there questions from members of the board for staff? Member Powager.
I would just like Katie Gardner to clarify who, what kind of positions these are.
Related service providers are those individuals who are certificated. They're required to have a certificate in the state of Alaska, and they provide supplemental services for special education. Examples would be occupational therapy, physical therapy, speech pathology, school psychologists. That really encompasses most of them. Adaptive physical education, I believe. Those are the types of positions we're talking about. And these are only for the non-tenured ones.
Member Powager.
And we do contract with them because they're hard to have as employees?
They are employees. These are individuals that we want to offer contracts to be employees for next year earlier than the board is required to under state law because they're non-tenured. We want to solidify their employment as employees so we can begin to recruit other employees. These are really hard to fill areas, and there are times when we have to contract with individuals who are not employees, but this particular item is for the expressed hire of individuals. They would be serving as employees.
Any other questions for staff? Seeing none, we have a motion on the floor. Let's vote. Motion passes. It's unanimous. That ends the action item section of our meeting. This takes us down to item 10, which is non-action items. This takes us to A, 12-091, Borough Area School Site Selection Committee Resolution, Permanent Facility for Fronteras Charter School. Superintendent Parma?
Yes, I would have Mr. Forrest comment on this item.
This item basically is information from the site selection committee. They're required to send it to the Board of Education. You have members on the site selection committee. The recommendation from the site selection committee is that what is now referred to as the Bogard site be the permanent home of a co-located facility with the Matsu Day School and the district facilities department.
Members of the board, questions? Member Larson. Member Larson, you're on the site selection committee, correct?
Correct.
Okay.
I have quite a few questions I would like to ask, and I can give you my thumb drive after if you want to look at it. And these relate to budgetary items. Once again, I've asked these questions before, and I have yet to get any real substance as far as answers, so I'm going to ask them again. And once again, it has nothing to do with the process that's going on because there was one assembly person that said I was hijacking the process. It is not. It's simply budgetary questions. We spent 15 minutes talking about budgetary question about food service and trying to scrub the budget. And these questions I would like to throw out, and if staff think they are reasonable, to at least come back and let us know as we vote on this issue next time, at least we will know the budgetary consequences of this issue. Our first question is, how much would the local, because this is this property will also combine with bonds. To talk about it, both Fronteras and American Charter have requested $10 million from the state of Alaska, possibly as a grant to build new schools. And Fronteras may be asking, if that doesn't come through, may be asking the borough for a certificate of participation bond. So these schools will become charter school borough schools. So that's what the questions I'm going to ask surround those schools. Once again, not trying to stop any process. How much would, question number one, how much would the bond payback be for the requested $10 million over the period of years it would be asked for? In other words, if a certificate of participation bond is accepted for $10 million, how much will the bond payback be yearly? Will it be $300,000? Will it be $400,000? Will it be $500,000? And over how many years will that be forecast? Would the existing lease payment be enough money to pay back the $10 million requested over that set period of time? The question there is, for instance, if Frontieris is paying $300,000 for a lease payment, is that enough money to pay back a $10 million certificate of participation bond?
Member Larson, can I ask a question of your question? Just for clarification, are you asking questions of staff now and hoping to get answers now, or are you just going over a list of questions that you have that you would like to get answered in some form or fashion?
Yeah, these questions, I'm sorry I didn't clarify that, are for next time when this comes up for a vote. So when we vote on this, we know what the cost associated with this is going to be.
And you have a series of questions that you would like information on so you can make a good decision, is what you're saying.
Yes.
Okay. Do you want
to? I would like to make these questions public.
Okay.
Are we actually going to vote on this in the future?
We're going to vote on it next time.
Are we? Because I thought we just have to comment on this. It's not a vote.
That's a good question, and I was going to ask. Just one second. I was going to ask that question because on the bottom here it says the board has discretion, and I was going to ask clarification on that, what administration's view is of this particular item, because we now have it as a non-action item, and usually we move those up, or they die as non-action items. What was the intent of administration?
I'm going to just speak briefly, and then Mr. Forrest can correct me if needed. Basically, in the process of selecting a school site, it does go through the committee that the borough establishes. Once they've selected a site, they run it back through the board for consideration. But I do not believe that the board actually needs to pass this for it to move forward. The borough can build this building no matter what the response is from this board. So this is a courtesy process, and if our board decides that this isn't something that they wanted to support, this still could happen. It's basically providing your input back to the committee at the assembly before it's heard at the assembly level. And Mr. Forrest, if I need correction with that, let me know.
Just one second, please. Member Larson?
The borough attorney, we asked the borough attorney at the school site committee about this same issue, and the borough attorney virtually said that the school board is an advisory board, so is the school site selection committee and the planning commission. And the borough can take the advice of the school site selection committee or the school board or the planning commission or not. All we are is advisory to the borough. The reason I want to bring these questions up for next week, because I really thought we were going to vote a yay or nay, or we're going to support this yes or no, because I didn't see a resolution like there was last year that said the borough can do whatever it wants to with its property and money. And I just wanted to bring up the point of the amount of money that we're talking about, and the other questions center around, this will become a borough charter school, and the question centers around who is going to maintain it and some other issues that I have to talk about. So future school boards do not get strapped with unfunded mandates on this issue as far as maintenance and other major costs.
So you still have several more questions you would like to read into the record for consideration. And okay.
And if you don't want me to read it into the record, that'd be fine.
You have the floor. Please finish the questions, and then we'll go to Member Gaddis and Member Cordero.
Number three, if a charter school could not pay the full amount of the lease required once that certificate of participation goes through, hold on just a minute here. I'm trying to do this all electronic. um, for any reason, which includes a drop in student count, who would be obligated to pay the remaining balance each year? In other words, if the cost is $400,000 or $500,000 and they couldn't pay that because of drop of count or some other reason, who is obligated to pay that additional money in that bond? I practice this at home, and I'm not doing too good. Section A on the School Site Selection Committee states, the leaser shall provide any required tenant improvements at no extra cost for a charter school, no extra cost to a school district. Tenant improvements herein means meeting the education specific specifications related to the educational to the improvements required for the charter school. My question to staff is, what does this mean and who is responsible for these financial obligations? Number four, I'll hustle through these. Who is responsible for facility operations and maintenance costs? Number five, in that same ordinance, B states a lease may not include any provisions requiring a financial cash or security bond, penalty clause, or liquidation damage caused for premature lease termination by the school district or by the charter school. My question there is, what does this mean? And can a charter school decide to relocate to another building and move out of the site that is being leased under a certificate of participation for any reason? And if so, who would be responsible for that bond payment obligation? Number six, who is obligated to pay for any secondary cost to the charter school, such as catastrophic building incidents and or building failures, renovation, and major repairs to include landscaping, painting, carpet, and routine building maintenance? Who owns the building, and who is responsible for the building and property, and who is liable in a case of an accident or a lawsuit surrounding the property? Number seven, does the Charter's APC board have all the rights to the design of that building within the state and borough codes without any input from the borough or school district, even though the ownership of the building will be the borough, especially concerning building systems? Does the APC board pick a design company, or are they obligated also to go out to design bid? And how does the building process building process work, and who pays the obligation? In other words, if they do have, who pays for them to go out for bid? Number eight, is there a project manager, and who pays that cost? Number nine, if a charter school is approved for a certificate of participation bond or a grant from the state, will this obligate school district personnel to that project, and if so, who will pay that cost of that personnel? Number 10, will the district have any input of the building furnishings, such as desks, chairs, computers, telephone systems, buffers, vacuums, lawnmowers, snow removal equipment, and who has the ownership of those furnishings when this charter school becomes a borough charter school? And who will do the repair and maintenance on the said equipment? Academy Charter has received $1.5 million grant last year for school improvement. Does a 1% art obligation pertain to this $1.5 million? And if so, who selects the art in this borough school building? If the charter schools receive $10 million in a certificate of participation or a grant, Does the 1% art also under that obligation, and once again, who would select the artwork? Number 11, if a charter school like the school, if the charter school like the school district are renters, because the school district are renters of buildings, we do not own any building, we do not own the furnishings, and like it was pointed out, we cannot go out for liens. We are virtually renters of schools or borough schools.
Is this your last one?
It's my last one, believe it or not. Who owns the properties? Nor can lease meetings. Okay. So you got me confused there.
It worked.
I know. A charter school, like the school district, are renters of buildings and equipment and furnishings from the borough and own no property. Nor can they raise levies to meet the needs for unfunded mandates. That is why these questions are being asked, because I foresee future school district boards faced with unfunded mandates unless they can be put into the lease or that the borough actually comes to the plate.
Okay.
Because these will be and are borough schools.
Thank you.
And just one last comment that you'll enjoy, sir. The reason I'm asking these questions is strictly for financial obligations, not to stop this process and not to vote this process down. I would like to make sure that future school boards and the school board are not strapped with unfunded mandates in the future.
Thank you. Member Gaddis.
I, too, am on the school site selection committee, and I know that one of the things that, or the reason that we brought this forward to the school board is to make sure that the school board knew the site, agreed with the site, or if they saw anything obvious that we didn't see going through our whole matrix process and so on, that it could be pointed out. So kind of like more heads, more the merrier, but we really just wanted to notify that the site had been selected in the core area, and that's the site that had been selected. So this is where the school board says they like it, and that's a plus. If they don't, the school site selection will carry on.
Thank you. Member Cordero, then Member Walton.
Thank you. I do have a few issues, but I will try to be very brief. The first one is a question to Dr. Parama through the chair. When is the borough going to consider this resolution?
Through the chair, I'd like to go back to the site selection. Okay. This information will go back to the site selection. I'm not sure when the borough would consider that.
Okay. So I think what I would like to request is right now we have the resolution that the site selection passed that will go to the borough. What I would like to see for the next meeting, if we're going to take action on this, is a resolution in support of this process. And whether the board votes for it or not, that would be our action item. So I would like to request that we have that at the next meeting. I do want to make a few comments as a charter school parent, and I'm familiar with Fronterrens. The charter has already been approved, and the charter is really a contract between the school board and the group of parents that created the charter. So that's already one of our public schools. So in this case, it is part of the charter, if I'm not mistaken, that they have to buy their own furnishing. They have to put money into buying their equipment. That's why they're given the freedom to utilize their budget in a way that meets the needs of their school. And I believe that they would be responsible for that. And the next time that charter is up for renewal, I think that we will have an opportunity to review all those items. At the same time as our district in all of our school, in all the other neighborhood schools, we have to make sure that we are responsible for minor maintenance under $25,000. And the borough, according to borough code, they're responsible for major maintenance. I would assume that this being a borough building, that the same code would apply whether it's a charter school or a neighborhood school or any other facility, because it belongs to the borough. But I understand Mr. Larson's concerns, and I think that maybe it just needs to be clarified either by the borough attorney or someone from the borough, because, again, it is a borough building, and they already have a code that deals with that. But there are very valid concerns, and I think that they should be addressed to some degree. But other than that, I think that's all I wanted to say. Thank you.
Member Welton.
I guess, silly me, I was being very literal. It says the committee is forwarding the resolution to the school board for review and comment. I was not expecting a full-blown resolution because it's not necessary to do. But what if the board wants to do that to show support, sure. I agree with Member Larson that we need to have some answers on some of these things because it does obligate us if we don't get the answers and we vote on it. And, you know, if there's some real big issues concerning who does the actual maintenance work on the school, because it's a charter school, it's a different situation than in our regular schools. And if I'm wrong here, please let me know through the chair to Mr. Forrest. Charter school maintenance and everything is the leaseholders, yes?
In a lease facility, the questions which Member Larson is bringing up, we have forwarded. Are there additional questions other than the ones that you gave me earlier? I don't think so. So these have been forwarded to the district's attorney, who is looking at these questions in regard to how would you modify a charter school's contract to address many of these concerns. Because the issue that we have to discuss is we've had one incident already where a charter school had some catastrophic damage to the building they were in. In that case, the building was a borough-owned building. And as you know, we're responsible for maintaining all the school buildings. So there is some discussion. If it's a leased facility, then the landlord's responsible. If it's a borough-owned building, then right now the district is ultimately responsible.
I didn't mean to get into all of that, but I just wanted to make sure that there were some issues.
Before we continue, we're the issue here at hand is mushrooming. This is a site selection for Front Terrace, and it's basically a site, a piece of property. The concept of charter schools and charters and what's in their charters and what they're obligated for, et cetera, I think we can put that on a future item for discussion, and I think when we get to future items, we should do that. But I really, for the sake of time, we got a lot of folks here in the audience that wish to make some comments on some items as well. So, Mr. Larson, is this going to build upon what we don't know, or is this just going to add to?
I just want to state this is all new ground, and what I don't want to happen is just to go through the process and then these questions, in other words, I don't want to pass a bill and then find out what's in it later, okay? I would like to find out up front, and there's a lot of issues with this, especially minor maintenance, like it says in the ordinance, and I do agree with that issue with Ms. Member Cordero, that minor maintenance is done by the charter, but will the borough allow minor maintenance to be done by a charter when it's their building? You know,
and
I don't know these questions, and that's why I'm asking.
And I'm more than willing to, at the end of this meeting, for the sake of our joint meeting that's coming up, I would advocate for an agenda item on this particular issue to have that discussion with them. I'm with you on that. Right now, it's the site where the site was selected, and so I think your questions are very valid for that larger discussion, which I think probably needs to occur. Member Gaddis, did you have a?
I just wanted to let folks know that we do have a site selection meeting tomorrow. at 3 p.m., so we had anticipated that the school board would comment on this so that we could have it and move it forward. I know that Fronteras is planning to do their work as soon as possible, so the construction season is upon us. So.
Okay. So at this point, are there any members of the public that would like to speak upon this item? If so, come forward and state your name. And remember, we have 3 minutes, please, because we do have a lot of folks. So 3 minutes. Please come forward, state your name for the record.
Good evening. I'm Jennifer Schmidt, the principal of Fronteras. I think I'm on the sign-up sheet, too, but I'll just go now. I'm sure you know why I'm here. It is, of course, to ask for your support in the recommendation of the Bogard site for our school. But just as important as my asking for your support, it is also to publicly take the time that I'd like to right now to thank everybody who has been involved in this process since it started. I have learned a ton. There are so many entities involved. I had no idea what this would take. Working with the site selection committee members, they were fabulous to us. You folks on the board, the assembly has been great, but I really, really would like to take a moment to thank our district administration. Dr. Paramo and Ken Forrest, in my opinion, have gone above and beyond for us. They have given us guidance when we weren't sure what options were available to us, perhaps what our next steps should be. They have opened up avenues and connections for us that have just been absolutely overwhelming and wonderful. I have such gratitude to them, to all of you truly here tonight, and I'm just super excited. I also want to extend an invitation. We would love to host a school board meeting when we're in our brand new facility. So if you would jot us down for a future meeting, we would love to do that for you. But truly, thank you so much, especially to our district administration. They have just been wonderful. The whole process has been exciting, and we're still excited. So fingers crossed. Thank you so much.
Thank you. Please come forward and state your name for the record.
Thank you. My name is Michelle Nyland. I'm the EPC board president over at Fronteras. The great news is that we're not here to ask you guys for any money. There are always unavoidable budget difficulties that happen in any school district, and I think that these are opportunities that show us that changes need to be made in education. And I would really encourage you guys to look towards supporting charter schools like ours, where test scores are above average, parent involvement is way above average, and the costs are much, much, much lower than a regular public school. The other thing I wanted to point out is that this resolution doesn't change any statutes. It doesn't affect how leases are handled or how financing is handled for a public school. I think that Member Larson's questions, a lot of them were great, but they make an assumption about some of the funding that's going to happen. And none of that has anything to do with the resolution or with the site selection resolution that we're asking. We're simply asking for you to support that site. This has nothing to do with the funding, and I would just encourage you guys to just keep a focus on that and keep the two items separate. It's great to go into them. We'll facilitate that process as much as we can, but please keep them clearly separate. Thank you.
Thank you. Hi. Can you tell us who you are?
My name is Danny Farley. And I would like to read a letter to you guys. Dear board members, at school we learn new things every day. I like to do fractions and I love to write. We need a new school because there are a lot of kids who would love to go to this school, but there's not a lot of room, so we need it bigger. My dream school would be to have huge classrooms, a swimming pool, a hockey rink, a movie theater, a big computer room, a cafeteria, a ginormous playground, a bunch of instruments, and an awesome gym. Well, that is just my dream school, but our school does not have to be like that. Sincerely, Danielle Elizabeth Farley.
Thank you.
I am Jackie Cochran, and I am the teacher of Fronteras. I teach Spanish, of course, but my students are practicing writing letters in the classroom, and this is what's inside the classrooms. I have about four more students, if you can bear with us. They have letters. They wrote the letters, see the humor in the letters, and they're wonderful. And, again, thank you for giving us support on this site.
Okay. Thank you.
Hola, me llamo Leica. Estoy en el tercer grado en Fronteras. Mi maestra se llama Señora Cochran. What I like about school is learning Spanish. It gives you a chance to talk to other people in the world, and when you talk to other people, you get to know them. And that helps us to understand the world. Thank you. Sincerely, Lake and Island.
Thank you.
Dear board members, thank you for taking the time to come see our hard work. There are some things we do at school. First of all, we learn Spanish. Our math, our science, and sometimes reading is in Spanish. And even though sometimes it's hard, I really appreciate what the teachers are doing. They're helping us with lots of things, like getting us better jobs and giving us great opportunities. Second, my favorite thing about school is PE. I absolutely love being active. Third, let me tell you why we need a new school. First, we really need more room because we are really squished. My dream school is, well, it would have a science room that was huge so we could do all sorts of experiments. And that's the only thing I would change about the school. Sincerely, Sina Lund.
Thank you.
First of all, my name is Kylie Lund. I'm a sixth grader that attends Fronteras. First of all, I'd like to thank you for letting me talk to you guys. First of all, what we would really need is bigger classrooms. Right now, we are trying to fit a lot of kids in little classrooms, so that would really help us a lot. And also, if we could have sinks in our classrooms so we could do more activities with the kids and not having to leave the classroom to wash your hands and your utensils and stuff. Second of all, all the science teachers would really like a science lab that they could do their experiments in and be able to have all their tools right in front of them. Another problem is bathroom access. We have bathrooms in both buildings, and we would like to have them where they are more accessible. If one of them is out, we don't want to have to walk over to the other building to use them. The same with the gym and music class. We also have the same problem. A really important thing that we want to do is keep the kids wanting to go there. We want to be able to have more activities for them to do, especially the middle schoolers, not having to go to other public middle schools to do their after-school activities. Another thing that we'd really appreciate is an auditorium. We would like an auditorium for a drama club and music and also doing assemblies. Right now we use the gym for assemblies, and we are really cramped in that little space. The two last things that I'd like to talk about is the library and the cafeteria. We would like a bigger library so we could have more books to let the students check out. And we would also like a cafeteria so the kids would have an option of buying hot lunch or bringing a lunch from home. Thank you for your time and attention.
Thank you.
I'm Leslie, a third grader at Fronteras in Senior Cochran's class, and the reason why I like school is because there's a lot of fun activities, and I like PE because we get to learn a lot of stuff, like stuff about our bodies and how to play fun games. And my dream school would have 5 stories, a popcorn room, a theater, and a huge music room.
Thank you very much.
My name is Allie Schneider, and I'm an eighth grader at Fronteras. And I would like to take this opportunity to thank you for considering our school for a permanent site. I play volleyball on the new Fronteras team, and it would be nice if to have the kind of facilities that others take for granted. Thank you.
Thank you. Are there any other folks that would like to speak upon this item? Please state your name for the record.
Hi, my name is Ernie Hetrick. I'd first like to disclose that I was on the school site selection committee as a representative for Fronteras. But aside from that, I guess I just wanted to point out some facts that that you may not be aware of yet, that the Planning Commission approved this recommendation on Monday night, and the Assembly moved forward our request for $10 million as a resolution with the state. So that those two things are moving forward in other areas besides just here. As Michelle pointed out earlier, we are not actually asking for any money right now. We are asking for approval to use a site. It is the first step for the school board to take in helping us to get a new facility. I hope that you can move forward with this without having all those questions answered. I'm still going to take some time to get my head around how art is specifically tied into the rest of these funding issues. I'm not sure that all the questions speak to the matter that's at hand, and I hope that you will pay attention to that as you move forward. This Bogard Road site is centrally located. It's good for collaboration with Teeland Middle School. It's good for collaboration with the Career Tech High School. The soils are good. The topography is good. The transportation access is good. All around, this is a good site for Fronteras. It's a good site for the school district to have a school at. If somehow down the road, which we can't foresee, Fronteras does not occupy a building at this site, it will be an ideal site for another borough school. We all know that schools are lacking. You're building them all the time. I've seen presentations at other school board meetings about 400 new students every year. That's an elementary school every year. I don't see that there's really a big problem with having another borough school. Would like to point out again that we are already a borough school. We already have a lease. We are already responsible for that lease. We are meeting the requirements of our lease. We are maintaining our building. We are stable. We've been around as a program for 11 years. We've been a charter school for 4 years now. Our student scores are above average. This is a way to get money. It's going to save us currently $30,000 a year that we pay in property taxes. If we were located on borough land, we wouldn't save just $30,000 because we're not looking at a $2 million property. We're looking at a $6 to $10 million property. So we'd actually be looking at saving $120,000 to $150,000 in borough taxes. So that's pretty good savings when you're looking to add teachers to your payroll right now. It's a fiscally positive step, and I hope that you guys will support giving us a site so that we can keep our money in the classrooms rather than spending it on facilities. Thanks.
Thank you. Are there any other folks that would like to speak on this item? Please come forward and state your name for the record.
Hello, my name is Anna Hartman. I know many of you here in the community for a long time, Ms. Gaddis, Mr. Olson, and Mr. Lacey and Mr. Cordero. And what I wanted to say is I work at Fronteras. I volunteered at Fronteras for the first year 4 years ago. And the next year I became an employee. And seeing the school grow from, first of all, its inception 11 years ago to now in its fourth year as a charter school tells me that the school is solid. The parents are a dedicated group of community of for example, they do transport their children in. There's no bus that comes and takes them. We have enrichment programs after school that are organized by a parent. I had little notes here, but I'm just speaking off the cuff. The other thing that I also wanted to say is that we as the Fronteras Spanish Immersion School are the only school in the valley. We provide great opportunities for children all over the valley, not just for Wasilla, not just for Palmer, but they can come in all the way from Chickaloon, from Sutton, from Talkeetna. So it does benefit all the children in the Matsu borough. We're also, I feel like we're setting a big mark, a global global standard by having the children learn a second language. And I invite you to come to the school. Last weekend, 2 weeks ago, and this last Monday, I was involved in Battle of the Books in Spanish. And it was fourth, fifth, and third graders. And this last Monday, I was one of the judges at Chugiak. They invited us to participate. It was wonderful to see the camaraderie between there's four classes, but there's nothing, they didn't have any common ground except the language and reading of the books. And it was wonderful to see that they were able to communicate and well-versed, and they came up to the microphone and answered in front of a panel of judges. So they're confident children. And first of all, before I close, I wanted to ask one thing. If I could ask all the Fronteras community members that are here to stand up, please. Can you do that? Okay. Are there any left?
They're all gone.
Okay. We had quite a few earlier, but most of them, maybe half of them had left. Thank you very much. I really appreciate your support.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Are there any other members of the public that would like to speak upon this item? Please state your name for the record.
My name is Nerissa Torres, and I want to thank you for the opportunity that you're providing a charter school to be in existence in the Matsu Valley. I am a teacher that, like Anna, started with as a public helper and was convinced to become a teacher for the Spanish immersion in Anchorage, and I worked there 12 years. Then I moved to Florida. And my friend called me and said, oh, they're going to open a charter school. You should come back from Florida and teach in Alaska. And I said, really? Matsu? I used to drive a long ways just to go to a Spanish immersion school in Anchorage, and I would love to do that. I drive every single day from Willow, and I am so proud of what we are doing as a charter school, and we are a different charter from other states. Florida, it's nothing to do, you know, with how we run businesses in Alaska, because charter schools are part of the school district here, and over there, teachers don't get paid what they should, students don't get the opportunities that they should, and here at the Matsu School, where I have seen that we are trying more and more to equalize the opportunity for public schools, charter schools. We are all public schools. Thank you for your support.
Thank you. Are there any other members of the public that would like to speak upon this item? Please state your name for the record.
My name is Sonia Cook. I'm a teacher at Fronteras and also a parent. My son Jared is in fifth grade this year, and he's like a typical boy. He will tell you that the only thing good about school is recess, PE, and going home. Last year, after his fourth grade year at Fronteras, he said, Mom, you know, I've never really liked school before, but Fronteras feels like home. And it does provide a home-like atmosphere for our kids. It's a rich learning environment, but our home is way too small. And whether it's the Bogard site or another site, we need a new school. We need a full-size gym. We need full-size classrooms. We need sinks and bathrooms. Thank you for taking the time to listen to me and for considering recommending the Bogard site.
Thank you. Please state your name for the record.
My name is Chris Whittington-Evans. And I'm the co-chair of the Facilities Committee for Fronteras. I was really hoping that you wouldn't have to hear us again in 2 weeks, but I guess that's your decision. I would like to first say that that my daughter, my daughter, who I have two of at school in Fronteras, last night we were talking. They brought it up all on their own because they're sort of immersed in this process. She said, you know, the one thing that I want from this school is elbow room. She said, I sit at a small table and I only have this much room. So you've heard that a lot tonight. I'd like to say that, you know, and I've said this, I think, before, We can address the glass half empty or the glass half full. Fronteras, charter schools, the opportunity, the diversity, the wealth that they bring, the opportunities that they provide, enrichment that they fulfill, not just the students within their walls, but the opportunity for the students beyond their walls is present. We've gone through this public process, and I want to thank everybody here and for those who made this happen in 2009 through the legislation that formed this process. We are the first to go through it. There are some stumbling blocks. There's a learning curve here for all of us. But we elected to go through this process, to embark upon it in a good faith effort, which we did. And we're hopeful. We're very hopeful. We have resolve that it will end in a good way. We bring to it our wealth of resources. We bring to it right now $300,000 a year is what we pay in our facility costs. With an enrollment that we project to be 340, we would bring approximately $500,000 to $600,000 a year to pay facility costs. This is an answer to some of Mr. Larson's comments. We're not at that point in terms of asking you guys for money. We're hopeful that the state will offer us a capital grant and will thereby essentially give us a facility and the borough a building. A lot of the answers, I think, to the questions that Mr. Larson posed already exist as an academy charter. That's an example that's already occurring and quite successfully, actually. And they've just been given more money and an additional land to expand upon their program. We hope to do likewise. There is not parity in the borough currently with respect to charter schools, and we seek that parity. We would like to be able to take the money that's been given to us through the voters that the state refuses to give us because we're on a privately held lease. We'd like to be able to take that money and use it for playground equipment for our kids. Thank you.
Thank you very much. Are there any other members of the public that would like to speak on this item? Okay. Seeing none, we're going to take a real solid, no more than 5 minutes. There's just some questions that need to be answered. Thank you. 5 minutes recess. No, it's just it was a hearing issue.
Okay,
we're back in session. Just going to do a round with each of the board members and ask them, Member Cordero, do you have an issue with the site that's been recommended by the site selection committee?
No.
Member Lacey?
No.
Member Larson? No. Member Gaddis?
No.
Member Powger? Member Welton's not here, but she has expressed to me she has no issue with the site. So the individuals of the board have no issue with the site. My understanding is there's a site selection committee meeting tomorrow as well.
Correct.
And that the borough is already in the process of acting on the site.
That's correct.
Okay. I think we're done with this particular item at this time then. So, yes.
So just to clarify, am I hearing say that the school board has passed this resolution to go back in a positive manner, and they're stating that the site is okay with them? I apologize. Is the site okay? The site
that
is okay with the school board.
That was the purpose of me going around, was that we publicly state that as individuals we have no issue with the site.
Thank you.
Member Larson.
And can you just clarify the reason why this isn't a resolution, because it would be on, we couldn't do it till next time.
Right.
Because it wasn't public.
Right. So just want the individuals associated with Frontera's Charter School to understand that you have no board members that have an issue with your site, so that the process will continue. Okay? So as long as we understand that. Okay. Thank you. So this takes us down to item B. And this is a non-action item once again. Item B is 12-098, Berezovia, 2012-2013 school year calendar.
Mr. President, just presenting the information here, this is done every year to meet the needs of Berezovia community. If there aren't any questions, administration does not have anything further to say. It's self-explanatory.
Are there any questions from members of the board to staff regarding this calendar? Is there anyone in the audience that would like to speak upon this calendar? This will come up to us once again at the next school board meeting. Thank you. This takes us down to item C, discussion item, K-12 schedules. Dr. Parmo.
Yes, at the last few board meetings, there were some concerns expressed during persons to be heard in regard to seven-period day and what we're doing at other levels with middle school and elementary school scheduling due to the 125 FTE reduction that occurred between last year and this year. So we, during the persons to be heard, as you know, there is not a question and answer session. So administration wants to provide the board with this discussion item to review the process that took place to establish all schedules at all the schools from the elementary level. Remember, we had a reduction with specialists and teachers, and each school had to determine how they would continue their programs. Middle schools was left open to choose, knowing that they had a reduction, a mean of about five people per school, five teachers, to design a schedule that met the needs. Finally, the high school, of course, our high schools, because of our resource sharing and busing that happens during the day to allow students choices, we do have to have our high schools who participate in those choices to be on a common schedule to efficiently bus them. So the schedule for seven-period day was decided. This was determined not by administration, but with administration in conjunction with MSEA and other representatives of the teacher unit or certified staff. I would like at this time for the person who directed those work sessions to come forward and present the information. Therefore, then you would understand. We do know that had we not been faced with such reductions, we would not have changed the schedule. It didn't come up prior to this time. We were faced with providing students an education for the performance scholarship, so our students would have the opportunity to take the courses needed to be able to qualify for the performance scholarship in Alaska, as well as retain courses. Most of our high schools, large high schools, lost 5 to 7 people. If each person on a six-period day taught 5 periods, the schools that lost the least were about 25 sections. This was an availability and an idea to restore student sections for student choices. It wasn't an idea to have students suffer a rush schedule. And so we've worked with the students and the staff at the schools to look at alternative ways not to be so rushed, but to retain course offerings while we were reducing staff. I'm hoping this year we will not. I'm hoping and working, actually. I'm not just sitting home hoping. I'm actually beating the pavement trying to make sure that we're not going to reduce staff anymore at our schools. It is teachers in the classroom with students and that magic that happens that kids learn, and so we highly value that, but we need to have the availability of the intervention courses, which a seven-period day allowed. We added courses for AP this year, interestingly enough. We actually added courses in a reduction year because teachers volunteered to teach them, especially in some areas such as art and music. We added some AP courses. So it was an effort for children to provide an education for kids, and we just want to share the thoughts that went through the working groups who were made up of principals, counselors, teachers, and administration. Here, let's have it, and if Mr. Verbalo and can come up and share some information. There came a couple of times in regard to the budget about asking questions, and I want folks to know that the budget materials are online. The seven-day materials, we will put them online. Anytime you may come and ask a question. There was some testimony in regard to not being able to have questions answered, and certainly I am known to have an open door. Please come in and ask me a question. There isn't any secrets here. This is a process of the district, and it was an open process. So with that being said, I'm going to turn it over to staff that are here.
Thank you. Good evening. school board, Superintendent Paramo, and school board president Dunleavy. Tonight I've brought three principals with me that are going to help share ideas and opportunities that they're still providing kids in their buildings. And they will be speaking in a few moments after I go over an overview of the last 2 years in the process. This evening, we wanted the opportunity to share with you budgetary issues and solutions that administration, building principals, and staff have been working on this year and the past year in regard to K-12 instruction. As the board is well aware of, budget deficits and fiscal issues have been and triggered major changes in the last 2 years. This has created many challenges for us K-12, but we've been very solution-oriented and problem-solved the best that we possibly could to offer opportunities and choices for our student body. Our school district for the last 20 years has basically had a status quo scheduling model, K-12. Specifically, elementary schools have had three special teachers. High schools have been on a similar six-period day for that amount of time. Middle schools have had the team concept. I taught at Colony Middle School nearly 20 years ago, and we had a team time. Times are different. We hit a funding cliff that we knew that was going to come years ago. We had past superintendents. I remember Mr. Larson talking about the funding cliff. It has arrived. It's here. It's been significant. Therefore, in response to the reductions in staff at the elementary level, we have modified how we offer library, music, and PE class, as well as providing quality instruction with larger class sizes. Previously at the middle school, like we talked about, we offered team time. That gave teachers an opportunity to have cross-curricular units, build lessons. They also had a time where students would have a team where they could meet and have that special small group instruction. With the new model, we no longer have the opportunity to have the team time in place, which has existed for close to 20 years. At the high school level, it's been evident over the past 18, 20 years that we have been able to offer programs. We've offered electives. We've offered intervention courses. We've offered honors courses. We've offered AP courses. Unfortunately, when the funding cliff hit, a lot of those opportunities were not available. That is why we went to a different model like Dr. Prom was talking about. The seven-period option was an option. The only reason we went to it was to increase offerings that we lost under the six-period model with the reduction of staff. Before I begin tonight, I really want to go over the process that we had over the last 2 years to inform you of the timeline. In front of you, you have a packet. If you want to pull that out, go to the section on overview. And as I go through the presentation, please follow along. This will just sort of help you give an idea of the meetings that we had. Over a year ago, Dr. Burnley asked the Department of Instruction to review alternate schedules for high schools to explore and maximize student offerings despite a reduction of staff. Last year, we lost 125 FTE, which equates to over 200 actual positions, as was evidenced through the audit presentation at Mat-Su Central School a couple weeks ago. In short, we were tasked with keeping our course offerings while meeting the new fiscal reductions. Please note in your packet, one of two, a timeline of events which began February 1st of last year. We had our first meeting with principals, counselors, teachers, MSEA, and CA presidents, TOSAs, as well as district office administration to begin this discussion. Stakeholders began looking at various schedules for all secondary high schools. During the meeting, we discussed and reviewed many options. Options included 6-period days, 7-period, 8-period. Across the country, these are not new concepts. Across the United States, there are schools doing the 6-period model, there are schools doing the 7-period model, and there are schools doing the 8-period model. Typically, those models are a function of a budget. Mike.
What is the length of those periods, generally speaking?
Of the 6 and 7 are
40, 50, 55, just for the public.
for the public, in a six-period model that we currently had, we did different. So we had bookends, which was a bookend model that I'll get into later, and it's in the packet. If you want to wait, I could go. It's in the presentation, and I'll spell it out for you. So those different models we looked at, and like I said, across the country, those exist everywhere, and they're functioned largely due to budgets. If you're on a six-period model, you do increase student contact time versus an eight-period model. In an eight-period model, you have the least amount of instructional time. In a six-period model, you have the most amount of instructional time. Seven is somewhere in the middle as far as instructional time goes. With an eight-period model, you have more offerings. Six-period model, you have less offerings. Seven, once again, would be right in the middle. With the eight, over a course of 4 years, you'd have 32 offerings or 32 credits. On a six, you have 24. So that was some of the stuff that we looked at as a group last year. We tried to look at different schedules, what were the opportunities for offerings as we were directed. We knew we had lost a lot of staff, and one of the goals was to create a schedule that would maintain those programs and offerings for our kids. As the timeline goes on from last year, we show additional meetings and opportunities for stakeholder input that was provided. Concluding three formal meetings last year and many conversations with building leadership, the recommendation was to move to a seven-period schedule for the FY12 school year. We accomplished this goal by creating a seven-period day schedule that was very similar to the past six-period model, where students would continue meeting with their teachers four times a week, just like they were previously. That was one of our main objectives last year when we did this. We wanted to create a schedule that was as close to the six-period model that we had been working with for years. In the past six-period model, teachers met with their students four times a week. In the seven-period model that we created, you still meet with your teachers four times a week. To give you a quick overview of what that would look like, on the past six-period day model, we would have what we call two bookends. That means on Monday and Friday, you see all those kids. And you can look right now. Yeah, go to the tab section. Actually, a good section to look at is the one that says FY11-12 Wasilla High School schedules. And if you look in there, this is Wasilla High School's six-period schedule that we operated under. And, Mike, this will show you the amount of minutes that you have. In that schedule, if you look on the Monday and Friday, that you have all six courses. So the idea and the reason behind that is that when kids leave to go to their weekend, we want them to be able to see every teacher before they go. And when they come back from the weekend, you get to still see every teacher. So that's the bookend part, that on Monday and Friday, kids have the opportunity to see the teachers before they leave. And when they come back, they see every single teacher. The block schedule in the middle has four class periods. Those were lengthened to increase instructional time so you could have more time to get down to the core instruction, meet the efficacy, and be on model with the programs. It just basically gives you more time to build relationships, get down to the core basics of what the teacher needs to do. So it really had the best of both worlds. You have the short periods where you get to see the kids every day, and you also have the longer periods where you can go more in-depth with instruction.
At this time, Mr. Dunleavy, to answer your question, if you want to take a look at the difference since everybody is at this section, 2010-2011 schedule, right behind that is the new bookend schedule with seven periods. And you'll notice the tutorial in the middle of the day in 2010 and 11 actually changed into a class period. And each of the other class periods were reduced. And these are their actual schedules, so you can really have a comparison of what this did to this one particular school. You heard Palmer High School teachers mention that they had their tutorial that only if kids were behind they had it, and they added it to lunch. Therefore, the kids who were on track had a longer lunch. At Wasilla High, if you didn't have a D or an F, basically that was your free time. So you could walk, go to a club meeting, or you can choose not to. You could choose to study in the hallway, catch up with whatever you need to catch up with. But if you received a D or an F, just like Palmer, you were assigned. Colony High School assigned every child during every period of the day.